Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Friendly Manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson Windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hull's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to hullswindowcenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hull's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HULLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sim.
To understand it,
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
If Romney gets the nomination, the tunnels win. Think about it. Taurus, Terra, Earth. Tunnels.
Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Peter King. It's been a day of conflicting reports of just who has custody of Saddam Hussein. The Associated Press is reporting a top Iraqi official says he'll be executed before 6 a.m. Saturday Baghdad time. That's 4 hours from now. CBS News Pentagon correspondent David Martin.
The Iraqi government wants to execute him as soon as it possibly can, but the timing has been complicated by the fact that a Muslim holy period is about to begin. And Muslim law, or Iraqi law, excuse me, apparently holds that you cannot execute a Muslim on a holy day. But the issue really is now one of timing. Will Saddam's life last a few more hours or a few more days?
Saddam's attorneys have not only filed an appeal in Iraq, they've also asked a U.S. judge for a stay of execution. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
The argument is that Saddam Hussein is a defendant in a civil case here in the States. And in order to do justice in that case, he has to be given his rights and so forth. I don't think that's an argument that's going to fly. I don't even think it's going to get to the U.S. Supreme Court before it's rejected.
The Detroit area has the largest Iraqi population in the U.S., and WWJ's Ron Dewey has been getting reaction there.
Iraqi Americans in Detroit say Saddam's execution cannot happen soon enough.
Saddam Hussein, he stole Iraq money, he killed the people, he did too many bad things.
He's guilty for everything.
They did everything, tried to save Saddam, but it's too late.
One resident predicts a celebration in his neighborhood upon word of Saddam's hanging. Ron Dewey, CBS News, Detroit.
In Palm Desert, California, the first church service is for former President Gerald Ford. Let's go there live. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman.
Peter, it began with pomp, hail to the chief, as the casket was removed from the hearse. But for the Ford family, much of this day has been spent in prayer inside St. Margaret's Episcopal Church. The Ford family is still in the church as this private prayer service wraps up. The Fords have been joined by close friends. Once the family leaves, the public will be allowed inside. Mr. Ford's body will lie in repose. The church expects to be open throughout the night. Tomorrow, Mr. Ford makes one last trip to Washington for a state funeral. Live in Palm Desert, Steve Futterman, CBS News.
This is a familiar sound in Denver. Shovelers working hard as the snow piles high in the Mile High City again.
I'm Lee Frank at the Greyhound bus terminal in downtown Denver. A couple hundred would-be travelers have been stranded here since Thursday afternoon because the buses aren't running and might not start running again until sometime Sunday. Greyhound says they apologize for the inconvenience, and if road conditions improve, they'll get the buses moving sooner.
This was Wall Street's last day of trading for the year. The Dow closed down almost 39 points, but finished the year above the 12,000 mark for the first time. This is CBS News.
Okay, team, let's get started. Now exiting for Hazelnut Serenity.
Introducing Splenda flavor blends for coffee and hazelnut, French vanilla, and mocha. They add delicious flavor that takes you someplace else.
Ah, a yoga retreat with no pie charts. Assume the lotus position and sip. Breathe in tantalizing hazelnut.
Oh, Margo?
What? Yeah, it's totally zen.
New Splenda flavor blends for coffee. Visit them at hazelnutflavorblends.com. Find them in the coffee aisle.
My husband had a health concern a month ago.
Mr. Thompson, everything looks good.
Oh, thanks, doctor.
It turned out to be nothing, but it got us doing more for our health.
And stretch and bend.
Like morning exercise and taking silver.
Centrum Silver Multivitamin is age-adjusted. It helps protect your health as you age with key antioxidants that help support natural cell repair. Centrum Silver Multivitamin.
Things have sure changed around here.
Our health protection starts with silver.
Take along with a healthy diet and exercise.
The threat of avalanches scrubs the search for an American mountain climber missing in northern China. Reporter Trey Thomas has more from KIRO Seattle.
Dave Jones finds it difficult to speak of his friend Christine Boscoff in the past tense, even though logic tells him she more than likely died on a remote mountaintop in China.
It is difficult to really come to that conclusion until we can bring an end to it by finding her body.
Ironically, Jones was one of the people who decided to suspend the search for Christine, partly because the body of Boscoff's climbing companion, Charlie Fowler, was found buried beneath an avalanche.
As winter sets in and the snow grows, the risk of subsequent avalanches just continues to increase.
They're building a new monument to salute the Apollo moon program in Titusville, Florida, just a few miles from the Apollo and Space Shuttle launch pads. But organizers say they need $200,000 more to finish it. And the monument will have a stainless steel Apollo A with globes representing the Earth and Moon, connected by the mission's flight paths. I'm Peter King, CBS News.
Thank you for calling for your...
How would you like... At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever Jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins, just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever Jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Live from our studios in New York City, this is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
6 minutes after the hour, I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel Maddow on the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Good evening, good afternoon to you from coast to coast. I am glad to be with you. And before we get started into the thick of things this evening, let me start by saying Saddam is still not dead. Of course, Osama bin Laden still not captured. But the big news today, Saddam is still not dead. Before we get to the rest, I want to give a sincere thanks to the folks back in New York and the Air America staff who have made me feel so welcome this week. Chris Lopresto, Dave Weissman, thank you so much for your help and being a friend to me this week, talking me through it when I get freaked out and panic attacks in the studio. Jackie Bell, Amy Winslow, also thank you so much. Brian Tarani here back in Madison where I'm broadcasting from this evening. And, of course, the incomparable Rachel Maddow, who will return next week in the new year. I just think she's the best. So to be able to fill her place for a couple of days has been the biggest treat of my life. And coming off of a month and a half of unemployment over the holidays, it means the world to me. So I want to thank all of you for helping me out this week and making me feel welcome because it makes me feel like Air America is my America. And maybe that's where we start this week. You got a call from, for those that don't know my situation or the situation here in Madison, Wisconsin, one of the liberal meccas of the universe, and I'm proud of that. We were being, right after the elections, I lost my job as the morning show talk show host here in Madison, along with my co-host Jody Schaubeck, and we were, both spent the holidays unemployed. The management here in Madison said that they were going to flip from Air America Radio to high school sports, Fox Sports. And they cited market research that showed that there was a need for more high school sports. And to my knowledge, I have never seen that market research. I'd be very curious to find out where it came from. But over the course of the last month, an uprising of listener action and advertiser support has brought Air America back to Madison, Wisconsin, where it will stay. And I couldn't be more proud of it. And let me admit to you, first and foremost, I had nothing to do with it. You know, I was wallowing in my own self-pity while listeners to this radio station and our morning show here in Madison, Wisconsin, picked up the reins and took it right to the management of this radio group and said that this is our radio station. And for those listening in Columbus and those listening online now in the Boston area, may I just say, make it your Air America. That was the whole intention. That is the intention of this radio network, that it's yours. This isn't the voice of the few propagated on the idiots. This is the voice of the many trying to further the people's democracy in this grand experiment. And what we have seen in Madison, Wisconsin, what we will see in Boston, Massachusetts, and Columbus, Ohio, is a people's movement, in theory. These radio waves are your radio waves. We have proven that theory to be actual fact here in Madison, Wisconsin, and I encourage everybody to make it your Air America, as it is mine, as I'm a fan first and foremost, and then a talk show host second. I think that's obvious by now. But what we have seen in Madison, Wisconsin, can be replicated across the country, and there's a couple reasons for this. First and foremost, it is your radio waves. And second, we are... We're one of the most popular radio stations in Madison when they decided that they wanted to pull the plug. We were also one of the most popular Air America affiliates in the country. Through grassroots support, through organizing, and through protests, the community here in Madison, Wisconsin, restored their radio station to the air. And we've got a community radio station that is great and is progressive here in Madison, Wisconsin, WORT, but one is not enough, especially for places where people think for themselves. And I want to encourage, I've got a website for you, nonstopradio.com, started by one of the organizers that kept Madison's Air America affiliate on the air. Nonstopradio.com is a website where we are building an organization for grassroots support that will continue to develop and make Air America our Air America, and it will stay that way for as long as we continue to become a part of it. And I would encourage you not just to listen, but to take action. And it's what we've seen in Madison, and it has made a world of difference. I am very excited for 2007, and I hope you are as well. We've got a Democratic Congress, we've got a lame duck president, and we've got Air America on the air in Madison, Wisconsin, where it belongs. And I look forward to the new year and hopefully sharing it with you at some point again. Big story today, nonstopradio.com is the website one more time. Big story today, the Associated Press, along with America Online, has a new poll that shows, and this is impossible to even fathom, new poll out says the Bush is the worst villain in 2006, according to Americans. Bush is also the biggest hero in 2006, according to Americans. In fact, according to the poll, Bush was worse than Satan himself, but better than Jesus Christ. I'm thinking through that one still. I don't understand it, but in this AOL AP poll, our president is actually ranked worse than Satan, but he's better than Jesus. I had no idea. The new poll from AP and AOL found Americans' perception of President Bush is torn. The past year's biggest villain, far and away, the number one choice with 25% of the vote, George W. Bush, trailed by Osama bin Laden, who, by the way, is still not captured, and Saddam Hussein, who is still not dead, and Satan himself. Donald Rumsfeld actually ranked worse as villains of 2006 than Satan himself. But Bush also claimed the top spot when Americans were asked to name the year's biggest hero, with 13% of the vote, and in that he beat out the likes of Jesus Christ. So I guess the point here is it's not that the president is worse than Satan and better than Jesus. It depends on how you see him and then how you see whatever those evil powers and good powers you believe in are. I guess if you believe that Jesus Christ would discriminate, if you believe in that figure, then, of course, you would think George W. Bush was your hero. If you think Jesus Christ would support the killing of Iraqis for no justifiable reason outside of a lark and a lie, well, then, of course, George W. Bush is your hero. But if you don't see God as somebody who likes to kill the innocent and somebody who likes to discriminate against people different than you, then I guess maybe worse than Satan, though? I don't even believe in Satan, but I wouldn't put George W. Bush worse than Satan. I would say he's just a henchman. Other news today, great news for the people power across the country. A victory for Internet freedom advocates as AT&T officials have agreed to adhere to strict network neutrality conditions if allowed to complete their proposed $85 billion with a B dollar merger with Bell South. You know, they want to become Ma Bell again, a monopoly. But network neutrality, if you're not familiar, let me give you a website for it, savetheinternet.com. Without network neutrality, giant media outlets like AT&T, like Verizon, wanted to create a two-tier system of internet access. One for the rich, which would be easy and accessible, and one for the poor, where we would have to wait until the rich people are done to ever get access to the internet. It was an actual proposal that was being lobbied strongly by the likes of AT&T and Verizon and other media outlets, media providers. And now it looks like network neutrality, we have at least, here's a caveat for AT&T. They have promised to abide by network neutrality principles for at least 24 months. There is a window of 2 years here where we have to make sure that Congress makes law the idea, the concept that founded our internet, and that's network neutrality, that we all have equal access to all of the information on the internet at all times. And that was, believe it or not, being endangered. And a large part of the support for network neutrality has come from the Democrats on the Federal Communications Commission, Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein. A lot of what is happening in the grassroots efforts to keep our voices on the radio is coming with the support of Democrats on the commission, like the two Democrats on the FCC, Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein. AT&T's agreement now puts to rest their own excuses that network neutrality doesn't really exist and shouldn't, for that matter. And it also ends the stupid argument that network neutrality would actually cripple the world's largest phone company's plans to build broadband services coast to coast. All that is destroyed now, and we have a two-year window to make sure that our access to the internet, no matter what your class, is equal. That's where we start from today. Also wanted to take a look a little bit later at our rescue community, as this is the holidays. Get away a little bit from politics and take something that no person on the left or the right could disagree with, and that is saving the least of us. I look at some people rate their society by the size of their bombs or how big their guns are or how many garage car doors they have. I tend to rank society by how we treat the least of us. And in this case tonight, we take a look at our animal rescue with Nathan Winograd, the leader of No Kill Solutions. Also, we will be joined by John Stauber tonight as an end-of-the-year sort of celebration. We will be handing out the Falsey Awards. John Stauber is with Center for Media and Democracy, and his new book, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Mess in Iraq. He also has the Falseys out for the end of the year. We will give away the Falseys Awards, you know, for the BS in our news. That's all still to come today. Next, we're going to take a look at the effect of this war on our families. We have heard from the troops on the ground. We have heard from the generals on the ground. We have heard from the new Secretary of Defense himself. They all want to get home and out of Iraq. What does it mean for the families? We'll take that on next here on the Rachel Maddow Show. It is 17 minutes after the hour right now. I'm Lee Rayburn, live from Madison, Wisconsin, filling in for Rachel for tonight on Air America Radio.
This is the Rachel Maddow Show.
Inconceivable!
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
On Air America Radio.
It's Enid Live, weekday after.
cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... New rule, no more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. The world has turned against this. Your own personal internet. That is you and me. You and me. Tubes. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a good truck.
Laughing at the Truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
This is the Rachel Maddow Show, and I'm Lee Rayburn live from Madison, Wisconsin this evening, filling in for Rachel this week on Air America Radio. We have taken a look this week, given the opportunity to speak coast to coast, to listen to the troops on the ground and what they have to say in Iraq, as this war has weighed heavily on me this holiday season, and we are fast approaching, with 3,000 dead, we are fast approaching the fourth year that we've been occupying Iraq, and no matter who you listen to, if you listen carefully, you will hear that the troops want to come home. The generals on the ground in Iraq don't want more troops because there is no military solution to what's happening in Iraq. What we haven't heard from yet are the families of our military men and women in the armed services. And I'm not talking about Cindy Sheehan. We all know who she is. She's a role model of mine, but a divisive figure among the right. What about just regular family members? Here in Madison, Wisconsin, where I am, we had a... like every community, we lost somebody to this damn war. Mark Maida and his parents and his family, his dad was a police officer here in Madison, and they have now spoken out against the war. We also have stories from the Associated Press about the family of Jonathan Luton's 25-year-old sergeant killed during his second tour of duty. His father says more than enough Americans have died in the conflict, and his response to the Bush proposal for a troop surge, I want the boys to come home. Personally, I can't see where we're really accomplishing anything over there anymore. Another story of Sally Reaganhart's son, Christian, a firefighter and a Marine who was killed actually in the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001. Her response to what's happening in Iraq, I would just like this war to stop. In whatever we need to do, I can hardly tolerate it when I see these beautiful people. It reminds me of my son. And... I want to invite to the show now, if I could, a special guest, and he's my father. And my father's on the line to tell a special story, and it's a story that I thought of when I was thinking about the families of our armed services over this holidays, a story of his experience in Vietnam, and a story of his father's reaction to it. Hey, Dad.
Hey, bud, how are you?
I'm all right. You are coast to coast, and I wanted to talk about Ralph. Ralph was my grandfather. He was an alcoholic, but he also had a huge heart, and he was your daddy. Now, out of college, you were drafted, unfortunately not by the St. Louis Cardinals, but by the U.S. Army. And Ralph was the kind of guy who liked to, I remember the story of him and Grandma getting into an opera by Ralph claiming that he was Sam Rayburn, the former Speaker of the House.
He used that a lot, I think.
Now, tell me about the story of seeing Ralph on the tarmac. What happened there?
Well, I was home in 1971 on what was called at that time a 7-7. The Armed Services let the Vietnam vets or the guys serving in Vietnam come home for a 7-day leave and a 7-day R&R. And so I took advantage of that, and I came home and missed my family, of course, and wanted to see everyone, and came home for that leave, and took advantage of the 14 days. And on my way back, unlike some who didn't come back, I went through O'Hare Airport, and as I boarded the plane, I heard some commotion outside the plane, and one of the officers came on the plane and asked me to come off because there was a problem. And as I was coming off, I saw my dad on the tarmac, and he was there wanting to get on the plane to come back with me to Vietnam. So,
had he seen you during your 7-7?
I'm sorry?
Had he seen you during your 7-7?
I didn't see him. He lived in Chicago at that time. He and my mother, your grandmother, were separated. And so I did not see him. I tried several times, but unfortunately we weren't able to hook up. But when I was leaving, we had talked on the phone. He knew I was leaving. So as a World War II vet... And he served during that time and that period.
So he had to be about 50 years old, didn't he?
He was probably in his early 60s at that point.
And run down from...
50s, early 60s, about where I am now.
So I'm just imagining you on the tarmac, and I couldn't imagine that.
Yeah, and I was. It was a touching moment.
Did he have his bags packed? I mean, was he sincere?
He couldn't come back with me, and he wanted to in the worst way because he knew what war was. And unfortunately... my leaving, left a big hole in his heart, I'm sure, as many parents today who see their sons and daughters leave to go to a war in Iraq or anywhere in the world when they're in the armed services. And certainly, I know how that feels, and my feelings go out to, or my thoughts go out to all of them, I know how my mother and my father felt at that point in time, and I know how I'd feel if I had to send you away.
I wouldn't go. Believe me, you could come visit me in Canada. I've got to run, but I love you, and I appreciate you telling the story.
I love you too, buddy.
I'll talk to you soon.
It's a great story, and thank you for having me on your show.
Lee Rayburn filling in for Rachel Maddow on Air America Radio.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
It's the Morning Retort with...
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Book Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag. It's a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next, burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, or a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's fair. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
At Cash Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpot start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at cashcreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cash Creek Casino Resort.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show at 34 minutes after the hour. My name is Lee Rayburn, broadcasting live from Madison, Wisconsin this evening, filling in for Rachel on the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. And about 4 years ago now, I heard of a cat that was living on a farm. It had been declawed. It had worms. It was starving. It was dying. And I went and I catnapped it, literally. I took it and brought it home and took it to the vet, got it cleaned up, and saved it. And little did I realize at that time what I know now, and that the life I actually saved that day was my own. This is my Christmas holiday gift to my cat, Mookie, joining me this evening, one of my heroes from NoKillSolutions.com, Nathan Winograd. Nathan's a graduate of Stanford Law School, former criminal prosecutor, corporate attorney. He's written animal protection legislation at the state and national level. His creation of the country's first no-kill community was named one of the top 100 achievements in the nation by Metropolitan Home in 2005's Best of the Best. As director of operations for the San Francisco Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, SPCA, Nathan pushed the life-saving rate to over 3 times the national average for urban communities, and at the time, the best in the nation. As executive director for the Tompkins County, New York SPCA, he led Tompkins County to be ranked the safest community for homeless cats and dogs in the U.S., and Tompkins County became the nation's first and only no-kill community, saving 100% of healthy animals, 100% of sick and injured but treatable animals, and 100% of feral cats. He is currently the director of the No-Kill Advocacy Center, and look for his book on bookshelves in April, Redemption, the Myth of Overpopulation and the No-Kill Revolution in America. Good evening, Nathan.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
The honor is all mine, and you know, you are the one guest I have on this week that is not from Madison, Wisconsin, but that is only because I want to invite you to Madison, Wisconsin to do what you have been so successful at across the country, and that is promote the no-kill movement. For starters, maybe we need to start with 101. What is no-kill?
Well, no-kill is a movement that calls into question the necessity of killing in animal shelters throughout the United States. Most people in the United States falsely believe that there are simply too many animals and not enough homes, and that the best we can do for homeless dogs and cats is to adopt a few and kill the rest. That kind of paradigm was proved false, first in San Francisco, then, as you mentioned earlier, in Tompkins County, New York, and is now a movement and a philosophy that is spreading from coast to coast in communities throughout the United States. And it simply says that you know, as stewards of these homeless dogs and cats, we can do better than killing them. In fact, we can find all the healthy ones homes. We can find the ones that are sick and injured but can be medically treated homes. And we can find an alternative to killing healthy and treatable feral cats.
Nathan, when we look at animal rescue across the country, what is the cost? What are we paying as a society for our animal rescue community?
Well, I mean, as you know, let me break up the question if I could.
Sure.
As Americans, we're spending about $40 billion a year on our dogs and cats. And it's you know, the story you just told about Mookie is the same story I hear over and over across the country. And this is one of those issues that cuts across political lines and socioeconomic lines, and it cuts across cultures. As a country, we're pretty crazy about our dogs and cats.
There is no politics here, Nathan. This isn't left or right. This isn't Democrat or Republican. This is nothing other than humanity.
Well, you know, I have actually kind of preached the message at the invitation of, you know, what we typically define as blue states and red states. I've preached no-kill and have had it accepted in the reddest parts of the reddest states. In fact, one of the most successful communities in the country, one that is saving more lives than any other, is a county in southern Utah called Ivins, which is, again, the reddest part of the reddest states. In fact, you cross, they call it the Utah Mason-Dixon line, and you're on the wrong side of it, but nonetheless, they're saving 97% virtually all of the dogs and cats that come through their animal control shelter, because the mayor and the city council, despite having the large R's, are crazy about dogs and cats. And then you go to a place like Philadelphia, which is one of the bluest cities in a blue state, and you have a commitment by both the Republican and especially the Democratic leadership to save the lives of dogs and cats. So it's not so much, you know, about how much money we're spending. Are we spending enough? Are we spending not enough? Are we spending too much? It really comes down to people of all walks of life want to save dogs and cats, but there is a major roadblock standing in our way.
So money is part of the myth. Then what is the roadblock?
Well, I mean, there are several. The first is that we've all accepted that there is no other way, and we've accepted that simply because, you know, shelters take in what they consider to be a lot of animals. They adopt very few, and they've perpetuated this myth that there are, in fact, too many and not enough homes available for all the animals they're taking in, which is a terrible myth. And which is, I would say, single-handedly responsible for the killing being allowed to continue. The reason that dog lovers and cat lovers in the United States don't rise up, at least the ones in their community, and demand an immediate end to the whole bloody mess in their community is because they've bought into that myth. But as cities as diverse as San Francisco, in California, and Ithaca in New York, and Philadelphia in Pennsylvania, and Charlottesville in Virginia, and Richmond in Virginia, and Atlanta in Georgia, and Ivins in Utah have proved and are proving is, in fact, we can do better. And we can do better if we hold shelter directors responsible for the lives that come through there, and if we demand accountability from our shelters. I'll just give you one example. Following Hurricane Katrina, I mean, Hurricane Katrina really brought the issue of dogs and cats as family to the fore because folks were forced to leave their pets behind. I mean, you had rescue agencies literally telling people that you either leave the dog behind or you can't come. When Americans heard about the plight of dogs and cats there, within 30 days, the top four largest animal organizations in the country raised about $100 million to care for dogs and cats. The largest agency in the country raised $30 million alone. Do you know how much they actually spent on helping the pets of Katrina?
Couldn't even guess.
$4 million. So the other $26 million is still unspent somewhere in bank accounts.
You're kidding me.
And it's really... not only the local shelter, but these large national organizations that has somewhat ensured that progress would be limited.
Nathan, give me a ballpark figure of what our annual euthanasia rates for animal rescue is in this country.
We are, as a nation, killing about 5 million dogs and cats a year.
Oh.
And let me just give you kind of a contrast to that. When I went into Tompkins County, New York, I went to Tompkins County, New York after we achieved tremendous success in San Francisco. And one of the arguments that we kept hearing in San Francisco was that you might be able to save the lives of dogs and cats in a wealthy urban community like San Francisco. But you could never do that in rural America because people just don't care enough, or because there's more poverty or less education, more antiquated views of dogs and cats. And when that opportunity presented itself, when I was offered a job, I intentionally decided I was going to prove that myth wrong, that the question of urban, rural, blue state, red state, wealthy, you know, less affluent, that none of that mattered. The only thing that mattered was a commitment on the part of the shelter to save the lives and embracing the community that traditional sheltering vilifies, saying it's their fault for not taking care of their pets. And we proved very, very quickly that, in fact, if you embrace the community and put in place a series of programs that starts with accountability, that you can save lives. And we succeeded not only very quickly, but beyond anyone's expectations.
Nathan, how long did it take you to turn around the Tompkins County SPCA? What was the time frame there where you saved 100% of healthy animals, 100% of sick and injured animals, 100% of the feral cats?
We saved all the healthy dogs and cats overnight. Simply because we took killing off the table. And if I can share a story with you, my second day there, we were full, and somebody brought in a litter of six puppies. And one of my staff members, who I inherited, said to me, "Who are we going to kill to make room for these puppies?
Oh.
Because we have no room." And I asked for Plan B, and there was none. So I said, well, you know, here's the deal. I didn't drive 3,000 miles to kill dogs and cats. So if we don't find a Plan B, we're going to find staff members who can, because that's what we're here to do. And, in fact, we did. We brought out this old horse trough from one of the back storage areas, filled it with shredded newspaper, put the puppies in it, put them right up front in the lobby, and they all got adopted very, very quickly. When you take killing off the table, you become much more flexible in terms of what you can and are willing to do to save lives. But just to give you the contrast, if every community in the United States embraced the philosophy of no-kill that made Tompkins County so successful, and specifically the programs and services that make it possible, of the 5 million dogs and cats who, you know, will be killed this year, 4.1 million would still be walking around this earth today.
Nathan Winograd is my guest, and those numbers are astounding, mind-blowing, especially for any pet lover, and who isn't? I'd like to meet the person. Nathan Winograd's website is nokillsolutions.com. We will continue the conversation with him and give you an outline of how you can start your no-kill movement in your community, no matter where it is. My name is Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel Maddow, and a great thanks to her for allowing me this opportunity to speak about, well, this is my Christmas present to my cat. And we'll continue the conversation with Nathan next, right here on The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
Guess where I am going? I will give you a hint. It is a booze-fueled sex romp where anything goes.
The Rachel Maddow Show.
You are correct, sir.
Visit MaddowOnline.com to read Rachel's blog, Air America Radio.
That unfamiliar sound is...
Jewish people have to start. The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to. Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left Channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. SMUD financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
Strong evidence suggests that the Bush administration launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge and tortured, targeted civilians and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Hey, listen.
Listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
This is the Rachel Maddow Show at 50 minutes after the hour. My name is Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel on Air America Radio this week. My guest is Nathan Winograd. He is director of No Kill Advocacy Center online at nokillsolutions.com. And Nathan, we don't have a lot of time to do this, and certainly I could spend the whole show with you, but we've got to destroy the myth that there are too many pets and not enough homes to put them in, but we also have to put into action whatever it is that you have accomplished in the no-kill movement. And that, for you, seemed to start with just one day, at least in Tompkins County, New York, where you said killing is not an option, and that's all it took. But there must be more to it than that.
Absolutely, and there's a series of programs and services are the programs and services I call collectively the no-kill equation, because they were the programs and services that allowed San Francisco to become the first city in the United States to stop the killing of healthy dogs and cats. And I took those same programs and services to a rural community in upstate New York and created the nation's first no-kill community, where it didn't matter if they were young or old, healthy or sick, traumatized. It didn't matter if we could medically put them together. We patched them together, and we found them all homes. And there are a series of 10 programs, and if I can just quickly go through them, obviously it starts with comprehensive adoption programs. If you go into most shelters right now, most of them are open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, exactly the same time when people are at work or families with children are in school. And when you go do, you know, when you're looking for a dog or cat, you're going on a Saturday or Sunday after the kids play soccer, and guess what? The shelter's closed, so you go to other places. So things like comprehensive adoption programs, taking animals off-site to the mall, to locations where people work, where they live, where they play, subsidizing the cost of spaying and neutering, which is a significant expense for many dog and cat owners, working with rescue groups, working with community caretakers who feed the homeless alley cats of our communities. If people go to our website at nokillsolutions.com, they'll find two documents that I think are very, very important if people want to create change in their community. The first is called Reforming Animal Control, and it's a step-by-step guide to, one, encouraging, but if necessary, forcing your local animal shelter to embrace the no-kill philosophy, and specifically the programs and services I call the no-kill equation. And the second document is called the no-kill equation, and it outlines the necessary programs in detail. And the best part about it is it's actually more cost-effective. It costs less money to save a life for a municipality than it does to kill one. And just a quick example, if a shelter takes in a cat, holds that cat for the holding period, feeds that cat, cleans the cat's cage, then kills the cat and has to dispose of the cat's body, they're out $100. If they take that cat in, neuter the cat, and find the animal a home, it costs about $1.67 for a shelter to neuter a cat. And, of course, adoption means you have money coming in. So at the end of the day, the more lives you save, the less it'll cost taxpayers in a local community.
Well, and that only makes sense when applied to our own prison system, when you think of that it costs more to put somebody to death than to hold them in prison for the rest of their lives. It only makes sense. What are the next steps that we take? These all seem common sense, and I can't believe that most communities haven't taken these steps already.
Well, if you look at most shelters around the country, Lee, I mean, they really are run by shelter directors who have been at it for a long time and, are steeped in what I call a tradition of failure, and that failure, unfortunately, means killing dogs and cats. And I would say that the single biggest barrier to the creation of a no-kill nation, you know, a nation where those 4.1 million animals are saved, because there's always going to be some animals who are either too sick or too injured to be saved, and that's just the sad reality of life. But for all the others, for the 4.1 of the 5 million who are killed each year that who should not be killed, it's local government – and the shelter director, who's the biggest barrier to implementing this change in philosophy. And if I can just give you an example, you know, going back in history, you know, back in 1918, the United States, like the rest of the world, was gripped in this influenza pandemic at the time, and I think to this day it was the deadliest plague in U.S. history. And scientists from all around the country rushed to find a cure. And normally in the scientific endeavor, there's study and there's retesting and there's publishing and peer review, but because the ill didn't have that time, they really worked very hard to save lives, and kind of anything that showed promise, they rushed it to the field. That's how people act when they're dedicated to saving lives. And when San Francisco saved all healthy dogs and cats and Tompkins County created the first no-kill community, you would think that shelter directors all over the country would rush to find out about how this happened, to bring back with them the cure for the epidemic of shelter killing happening in their own communities. And in fact, not only did that not occur, most of them dug in their heels. And so if I can say the first step and the first prong of the no-kill equation might unfortunately be, and I hate to use this term, particularly on Air America, but regime change.
We use it often here.
Okay, at shelters across the country. If I can make one point about your comment that it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat,
yes,
most of the time that is true, but when we wrote legislation to protect dogs and cats on airplanes, legislation that President Clinton, you know, the Democrat, promised to sign, it was killed in committee by your friend, and I say that jokingly, Senator John McCain, a big R, who was more interested in protecting the airline industry than he was about dogs and cats. So sometimes those D's and R's matter.
Well, and I would still say that the D's would be on the righteous side of this one, because it only makes sense that we would want to treat the least of us with the most amount of respect. And to me, those are our children, those are our poor, and those, for me anyway, is my significant other. Everybody laughs when I say it, but those are only the people that don't know me. My cat is you know, my better half. And I know how close to death she was. But when we're looking at sick and injured animals, isn't that a matter of definition, Nathan, when it comes time to figure out whether or not they can afford to treat them or have to euthanize them?
Well, unfortunately, there is a new game being played in the field of animal sheltering, and that is many shelter directors are feeling intense pressure from the animal lovers in their communities, which are, as we discussed earlier, you know, they cut across all economic sectors, and for the most part, they're both Democrats and Republicans, and so it really is a force for change. But rather than really embrace change and really, in a rigorous way, start to put in place adoption programs and spay-neuter programs and foster care programs and programs of working with rescue groups and letting community volunteers to help with the shelters, they've started using the terminology of no-kill, but not necessarily the programs and services.
Nathan, we've got to end it here, but I thank you so much, and hopefully we can do it again. NoKillSolutions.com is the website. This is
Saddam Hussein, and when will he be hanged?
Will Saddam's life last a few more hours or a few more days?
And the memorial services are underway for Gerald Ford.
The long goodbye begins in California. I'm Steve Futterman in Palm Desert.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Cammie McCormick. Saddam Hussein awaits execution. Once he's handed over to the Iraqis in Baghdad, he could be hanged within minutes. CBS News correspondent David Martin is following this story from the Pentagon.
The latest is that Saddam remains in an American jail cell still awaiting execution. The Iraqis have legal custody of him since he was tried and convicted in an Iraqi court, but the U.S. military still has physical custody of him. That could change at any moment, and once it does, his execution could follow in very short order. In fact, he could go straight from his jail cell to the gallows.
And CBS News has learned he won't be alone. Joining him will be his half-brother, Barzan al-Tikriti, who was Saddam's intelligence chief, and former judge Awad al-Bandar, all convicted for their role in the deaths of 150 Shiites in the town of Jijel back in 1982. Security will be very tight, not just in Baghdad, but in Sunni-dominated areas of the country.
They anticipate that there will be some kind of violence. Saddam is a Sunni, so some of the Sunni insurgents might lash out either against the coalition, the American troops, or against Shiites, who are the faction that is now in power in Iraq. But frankly, the level of violence in Iraq is so high that it may be hard to notice a spike.
Saddam's lawyers, meanwhile, have filed a last-minute appeal here in the U.S. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
I don't think that any judge in America is going to want to get involved in this case at this time. To get involved into domestic Iraqi law and to stop an execution that, according to Iraqi law, is on the level. So I don't think this has any chance of succeeding.
An Iraqi official now says Saddam could be executed before 10 Eastern time tonight. Now this.
Hello, I'm George. Every year about this time, my wife gets concerned about my rowdy and crazy behavior. I can't help it. Happy Honda Days gets me all giggly and rambunctious. Hurry to your Honda dealer today and get an awesome deal on the 8-passenger Pilot, the ultra-functional Element, or the innovative Ridgeline. Yeah, baby. Happy Honda Days. It's going off, dude. Seriously.
Hi, Susie. Thanks for watching my kids.
Good timing. I'm making rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Ooh, my kids love chocolate milk.
So do mine, but I didn't make it for them. This Ovaltine's for us.
Really?
Hey, adults love the taste, too. Plus, I drink rich chocolate Ovaltine every day because it's high in calcium and antioxidants like vitamins A, C, and E. Ovaltine even has iron I need, which I can't get from Nesquik powder or milk alone.
Mmm, Ovaltine is good.
And it's loaded with vitamins and minerals. Nesquik powder doesn't come close.
More Ovaltine, please.
The U.S. government's warning Americans to be vigilant in the aftermath of Saddam Hussein's execution. Reporter Tom Foti has more from Washington.
There are no specific tips, but the FBI and the Homeland Security Department are urging local law enforcement agencies to be on the lookout for possible terror threats. The advisory was issued after the final sentencing of Saddam to hang. In Europe, security officials have been on a higher alert after several alleged terrorist plots were said to have been stopped. The FBI Homeland Security Advisory urges vigilance, but is labeled routine.
Paying tribute to a president, memorial services for Gerald Ford have begun. Here's correspondent Steve Futterman.
It began with pomp. As the flag-draped casket was removed from the hearse, a Marine band played Hail to the Chief. 88-year-old Betty Ford, looking frail and solemn, watched with her children as the body was brought into the church. The Reverend Robert Certain said a prayer.
With faith in Jesus Christ, we receive the body of our brother Gerald for burial.
Tonight, the doors of the church will remain open. Mr. Ford will lie in repose. Members of the public will be able to pay their respects. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Palm Desert, California.
I'm Peter Mayer on Capitol Hill. The Great Rotunda, scene of so much history, will once again be the scene of national mourning. Workers have already moved the famous Lincoln catafalque to this huge chamber in the heart of the Capitol building. President Ford's coffin will rest on the same rough-hewn pine platform that was built for the Abraham Lincoln casket in 1865. Following tomorrow evening's service here, the public will be allowed to pay respects to the nation's 38th president.
This is CBS.
our studios in New York City, this is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel Maddow this week, 6 minutes after the hour, broadcasting live from Madison, Wisconsin, Air America's Air America's most popular affiliate, the Mike 92.1 FM here in Madison, and I have a very special guest joining me in the studio, my old cohort, my old morning show host before we got the boot. And for those who don't know the story here in Madison, we were doing the morning show on Air America until they decided to flip Air America for high school sports. Evidently, market research showed that they wanted more sports, specifically the high school kind, which are so much fun to watch.
Lee Rayburn, I have missed you so much.
Welcome Jody Shaw back to the microphone coast to coast. She was my old co-host on the old morning show here at the Mike 92.1. Just got back from family vacation. How's the weather?
It's beautiful. All the way down there, all the way back. I heard some snow might happen later, but we're good.
Did you wear a winter coat at any point?
No.
New York Times is calling this our first ever global warming Christmas.
But nothing. Seriously. It means nothing.
Well, yeah, of course not. Because
we're fine.
Most of us will be left behind in the wake of the global warming, but some people will be taken away in a Jesus spaceship, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how the logic goes. So welcome back. And, you know, now the story is that they are going to keep Air America here in Madison, Wisconsin, where it's very popular, among the most popular radio stations in the city, while having one of the smallest, no, I think the smallest stick on the FM dial. And I told everybody that we compensate with red sports cars or silver Mercedes.
Right.
So
I wish it were a little bigger. So it's just I have to say thank you to every single person who signed that petition, who came out to the rally.
5,500 people signed the petition. 500 people stormed a concert venue here in Madison. People were turned away at the door, all to support keeping Air America on the radio. But what I've heard this week, Jody, is calls from Columbus, Ohio, where they're being threatened with losing their Air America affiliate. Boston, Massachusetts, where overnight their Air America affiliate was switched to Spanish-speaking.
Yep.
Paul Soglin was on the show on Tuesday. He's Madison's former mayor a couple times over. And he talked about how this is the litmus test that they are testing across, big media conglomerates are testing across the country to see if anybody cares. And from my experience and my opinion, I really feel like there are some of those who don't want this to succeed. I really feel that way, that there are those that would like to see this fail, because heaven forbid we should have the voice of the people on the radio. We should have a liberal talk radio station in a liberal bastion like Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, I was told there was no hope, that I need not keep my fingers crossed. I need not hold out hope that we were going to keep Air America here at Clear Channel Madison.
We were also told, I believe, that our ratings were going to...
And I left, and I cried, and I was very sad. I was sad for the loss, not just for myself of a job and for you, my friend Lee Rayburn, a job, but for the community, because, man, people support this station so much.
It's their Air America.
And it's not like every other top 40 station or any other kind of music station where it's like, okay, whether the people are there or whether they're not, it's just music, and you know what, I can get an iPod. It really speaks to what we're doing here.
I missed you, Jody. Oh, I missed you. I've been talking to myself all week. I mean, it's just been me in the studio.
I was so anxious for you. It's like we're like sitting down to dinner, and I'm like, yes. My religious friends over there, family, yes, I'm going to go listen, put my headphones on.
Putting the headphones on, because I'm sure I did a religious rant at some point.
Did you
hear that our president is a bigger villain to Americans than Satan himself? But he's also a bigger hero than Jesus Christ.
Well, you know.
There's a new poll that's out today, and Saddam's still not dead. Osama's still not captured. Just wanted to give you the update at 10 minutes after the hour.
Any news on that locally? I know there was a little bugaboo about a drug ring / dogfighting ring. Do we have any?
Wow.
This is why
I missed you, because you can set it up so well and just let me knock it down. We just had the leader of the no-kill movement on the air for our animals, Nathan Winograd at nokillsolutions.com. And we had a case here where we had a guy who was allegedly dealing drugs and also training pit bulls to fight and kill each other, which to me, in my vein of, you know, wanting to stop animal cruelty, ran me up a wall. And we talked about this gentleman, Robert Lowry, on the air. I got in little bit of water, hot water for that. It's unfortunate. But now he has been charged with animal cruelty. He has been charged with training dogs to fight. Oh, yeah, and possession of narcotics with intent to distribute. So I have been validated once again. I believe I offended an advertiser who did not advertise on our radio station.
Yeah, and had to apologize. Because you were saying specifically that those dogs can't speak for themselves, they're animals, and you were going to speak for them.
Yes.
And that if someone were to come out and stitch up your leg or stitch your eye back in your head, that person might have noticed it was a dog fighting ring.
When the excuse was made by this was obviously a lawnmower accident. And not dog fighting. The couple, Robert Lowry and his wife, are being charged in Dane County here in Madison with three felony counts of breeding dogs for fighting. And this comes 6 months after the 48 pit bulls were seized and continue to be held, as I understand it, at the Dane County Humane Society, where they are taking up a lot of much-needed space. Some of them will not be able to be adopted out because they have been trained to kill. And it drove me up a wall that anybody would treat our animals this way. And I went after them, and wouldn't you know it, they came after me. But that's behind us now, Jody. Nothing but blue skies ahead.
Moving forward.
Moving forward through this global warming Christmas, I've got to tell you, I have not had to buy a winter coat this Christmas. And I'm in Madison this holiday. When we've talked a little bit about it, the Spanish polar bears, or the Spanish bears, are no longer hibernating. The polar bears are drowning, and they're thin, which I guess, you know, eating disorder or global warming, you can take your pick. And this story, a giant ice shelf the size of 11,000 football fields has snapped free from the Canadian Arctic. A massive ice broke clear 16 months ago, but I guess we just realized it today. Scientists using satellite images later noticed that, hey, the part of the ice shelf is missing. Anybody seen it?
We were driving through. We drove through today only. Just today, we drove through Dayton, Ohio, and Indianapolis, Indiana, and just saw the brown cloud around this large city, which I hadn't really experienced being here because we don't.
Right.
We don't have just a lot of paper mills and processing plants, and I know that we do our part to recycle and alternative fuels and do a whole lot here in Madison, and was shocked because I hadn't seen it in so long. But they say it's not a problem, that global warming.
Isn't it great, though, to have such a warm winter? Isn't this awesome weather we're having? Front page of our local paper this afternoon, our afternoon paper, the Capital Times, the only local paper I read, says Wisconsin could be without evergreen trees in the next 100 years. Sea life could die by 2048, as I understand it as well. And yet, it's all okay, and let me tell you why. Because you and I, Jody, will be no doubt left behind.
Are people so selfish that they don't even consider not just themselves? Okay, sure. You don't want anything better for yourself, fine. But not considering your children or your grandchildren, that your kids aren't going to be able to go to national parks, to be able to go camping, hiking, fishing, none of that. Assuming we're still going to be here.
Well, we will, because we'll be left behind. Actually, you mentioned the national parks. I've got a great one about the national parks. And the guy who is not as great a hero as George W. Bush, of course, I'm talking about Jesus, who built our national parks. Grand Canyon National Park is not permitted to give out an official estimate of the age of the Grand Canyon National Park due to pressure from the Bush administration. This comes from our friends at Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. I love this story. How old's the Grand Canyon?
We don't know. What year is it?
We think it's about 15 years old. In fact, there is a book that they sell at the Grand Canyon, the little shop at the Grand Canyon, a book that claims that the Grand Canyon was created by Noah's flood itself rather than geologic forces. It's been on the shelves there for more than 3 years and remains there to this day. And part of the directive from the National Park Service is, under no circumstances are you allowed to tell anybody how old the Grand Canyon is. They don't like to reveal the age. In August 2003, Park Superintendent Joe Alston attempted to block the sale of the book at the bookstore at the Grand Canyon, the book claiming, of course, the canyon developed in a biblical rather than evolutionary timescale. It took about a week to make, you know. The National Park Service headquarters told reporters and members of Congress there would be a high-level policy review of the issue of how old the Grand Canyon is. Have we gone that far backwards that we're not dealing with global warming, but we won't even answer questions as to how old the biggest gaping chasm in this country is? In fact, that is exactly what has happened. No such review was ever requested. No such review was ever conducted or completed, for that matter. In fact, in 2005, 2 years after the Grand Canyon creationist controversy erupted, National Park Service approved a new directive which said, we're not going to sell anything in the bookstores, we're not going to say anything that isn't based on tested, scientific, peer-reviewed fact. Unless, of course, you ask us how old the Grand Canyon is. So may I wish you a merry global warming Christmas.
It was delightful weather.
By the way, I have a papier-mâché ornament that I made myself with paste and newspaper and toenail polish I just happen to have hanging around the house. Ah, don't. But I have a holiday gift for your daughter when I see her, who is just the sweetest thing on this earth. Let's take a quick break. Jody Schaubach joined me here in the studio in Madison, Wisconsin. She's my old cohort. Along for the ride. It's 17 minutes after the hour right now. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel Maddow on The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
What is it?
This is The Rachel Maddow Show.
Run away! Run away!
On Air America Radio.
It's The Randy Rhodes Show.
Whining about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it, because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
I wanted it all. Intelligence. Great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Halls Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sam.
To understand it.
Mitt Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? champagne is dead. See how easy it was? It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You got all, you think you got all the answers to the, all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
Mitt Romney gets the nomination. The tunnels win. Think about it. Taurus, Terra, Earth, tunnels. Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
This is the Rachel Maddow Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel this evening, along with my former co-host in the morning here, where we broadcasted in Madison, Wisconsin, on the mic 92.1 FM, Jody Schaubeck. And it's that time of year, Jody, where we reassess things, take a look back, and I know we've had to deal a little bit with people who treat people like money and money like people. And let me ask you a simple question. You know, what's the value of a dollar these days?
Don't know.
How was your Christmas?
It was good. Everybody else took care of it. Being unemployed really cuts down on that excess Christmas shopping.
Why your daughter gets papier-mâché ornaments from me. The United Arab Emirates plans to convert 8% of its foreign exchange reserves to euros from U.S. dollars before this coming September. It's the latest sign of growing global disaffection with a weakening U.S. currency. This is because of fears that the our U.S. dollars level is unsustainable because we owe so much money. Unemployed, you tend to use your credit cards, you start owing a lot of money, you know, nobody's going to loan you anymore after
sometimes
a certain point.
You got to eat, and sometimes you need to use a credit card to do that.
That's where our government is right now. In fact, United Arab Emirates is just the latest in a long list of oil-producing nations, including Iran, Venezuela, Indonesia, looking to shift their currency reserves into euros instead of U.S. dollars because the dollar has fallen in value in this country more than 10%. This year alone against the euro. In fact, Russia, Switzerland, New Zealand, all diversifying away from the dollar. And in their case, they're diversifying and selling off the dollar and buying the yen, making our dollar almost meaningless, creating what could be an inflationary period where our dollar won't mean anything close to what it used to be. It's the fifth anniversary of the euro on January 1st, on Monday, and they're welcoming their 13th member into the eurozone, where the euro is their currency, Slovenia, from the tiny former Yugoslav Republic. And in December, just this month, the euro came of age and overtook the U.S. dollar in terms of the value of notes in circulation. In terms of population, the eurozone, where euros are the currency, has 315 million inhabitants. It's larger than the U.S. at this point, and our dollar is shrinking because, well, we've borrowed so much. It's like our government was unemployed, which is no excuse because I know they had great jobs, real decent jobs with health care. And I think President Bush is on his 200th day of vacation today. It's not quite the same when you're not getting a paycheck for sitting at home in your skivvies. Now, having assessed the value of a dollar, what do you think the value of a life is worth anymore, considering there are those that treat people like money and money like people in our world? You don't have an answer?
I don't.
$5? $15? 25?
No, I value people a tremendous amount.
So you couldn't put a price tag. Well, we have, I don't know if you saw the shooting last night in Santa Ana, 50 shots fired in a shootout between a couple of Santa Ana police officers and a 33-year-old who was suspected of killing two Long Beach cops out in California. But after many years of decline, the number of murders climbed this year in New York, many other U.S. cities, reaching their highest levels in a decade. Why are our homicide rates so high? In New York, the city reported 579 homicides through December 24th. That's a 10% increase from the year before. In Chicago, homicides through the first 11 months of the year were up 3.3% compared with last year. In New Haven, Connecticut, there were 23 homicides, which doesn't sound right, as of last Tuesday, compared with 15 in 2004 and 2005. New Orleans, even with its post-Katrina exodus, still sees a homicide rate that is astronomical. Cincinnati posted their highest numbers of homicides ever. Oakland, California had 148 as of Wednesday, up 57% from last year. Well, they're all, when asked, given the same answer as to why our murder rates have gone up and up and up. Our supply of guns in this country has gone up and up and up. And listen, I love the Constitution. I support your Second Amendment right to bear arms. If you want to put a gun turret on the roof of your home, if you want to arm yourself to the teats in your home, go to town.
Right.
But here on my streets, where our children play, my nephew plays, in our schools, the craziest Republican in Wisconsin, which is saying something at this point, State Senator Frank Lissay here offered up arming teachers. Which we all thought was such a grand idea. Listen, if you want to put grenade launchers on the roof of your home, knock yourself out. As long as your neighbors don't have a problem with the noise, it's fine by me. But if you want to bring it to my mall, if you want to bring it on my street, I want you to put it away. I want you to keep it off. And that's because more guns means more murder. And that's what the New York Police Department's saying. That is what is attributed for our increased murder rate. Now, somebody else has made a counter argument. In fact, wrote a book about it called More Guns, Less Crime. Yeah, maybe you've heard of it. You read the book, More Guns, Less Crime. It shows more guns equals less crime. Doesn't make any sense. In fact, the author of the book, John Lott, said 98% of the time that people use guns, they merely have to brandish a weapon, and that's all they have to do. In fact, that number is up to 60%. And FBI everywhere says more guns equals more crime, and it's reflected in our murder rate this year. Jody Schaubeck, thank you for joining me. I hope we can do this again every day.
Happy New Year.
Lee Rayburn on Air America Radio.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
AM 1320, Sacramento.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your ass. All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
The Internet. It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights. Because he got tangled up with all these things that are going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal Internet, that is you and me. You and me is that tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag, is a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show at 34 minutes after the hour. My name is Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel. And thank you to Rachel very much for giving this great opportunity to speak coast to coast and bringing some of the issues that are important to me to you. And I couldn't think of a better way to wrap up the week with you than having John Stauber join me. John Stauber is part of the Center for Media and Democracy, found online at prwatch.org. They've also developed the Congresspedia, which is a wiki model for our congresspersons and what they're doing. Center for Media and Democracy has done that with the Sunlight Foundation. They're the first people I know of to expose Mad Cow with their book, Mad Cow USA, so long ago. Their new book, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Mess in Iraq, is on bookshelves now. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Lee. Sorry for this bad connection I've got.
No problem. As long as we can hear you, that's all that matters, because I know you've got a lot to say. And let's start with Saddam's trial and inevitable execution. He is not dead yet, as I understand it, but we will be teaching the world that killing people is wrong by killing him at any moment now. Has this been a kangaroo court as you've watched it, as you see this trial in Iraq?
Well, I think all you have to do is look at what the human rights groups are saying, that indeed this was handled terribly by the United States. You hate to be in a position of saying anything positive or appearing to defend Saddam Hussein, and I certainly don't, but the bottom line is even the world's worst dictator deserves a fair trial, and this trial has been condemned and criticized from the beginning. When you can't keep your defense team alive when they're being assassinated on the streets, it's not an indication that a fair trial is being carried out.
In your book, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Mess in Iraq, John, co-authored with Sheldon Rampton, you talk about how you make a point of saying that this deception is not over. While we were deceived into this war, and as to that there is no debate, the deception continues to this day. What did you mean by that, and where do we see it still?
Well, I think, Lee, that there's a tremendous confusion yet among the American public, and the three big lies that really sold the war are believed to a large extent by Americans. You know, just last July, there was a Harris survey that showed that half of all Americans actually believe that the weapons of mass destruction were found and that Saddam had them at the time of the U.S. invasion. That's absolutely stunning. I think if you did a poll today and you asked people, was Saddam involved with 9/11? Did Saddam have weapons of mass destruction? Did Saddam have ties to Al-Qaeda? Probably half the American public would say yes, 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 when even the White House, in its more honest moments, is forced to admit that the answer to each of those questions is no. So I think it's a very interesting time. I do believe the public remains extremely confused about the war, the reasons for it, and the fact that these big lies sold it. And yet, despite that, the majority of Americans want U.S. troops out immediately or within the next 12 months. So I think in some ways it's sort of a backhanded compliment to Americans that despite the lies and deceptions being so successful, they have concluded, let's get U.S. troops out of there. Having troops there only makes things worse.
Well, and yet we're going to put a so-called troop surge in, even though we already increased our troop strength in Iraq this year by 15,000 soldiers and Marines on the ground. And it didn't change anything, certainly didn't make anything better. It looks like we are on the road to do that again. And I can't help but contrast that with the Iraq Study Group, the Baker Hamilton Commission's report, and their suggestions, along with Robert Gates, our new Defense Secretary, Robert Gates, who was part of the Iraq Study Group until he was appointed to be anybody but Rumsfeld. Here we are, and when you say that the deception is not over, John, I see it. I see it every day because we had opportunities to take a turn in the right direction here, and the president, and I don't know why, and maybe you could speculate, refuses to take a step to end this war.
I think that in the case of this president and this war, he's just like much of the nation, counting the days until he gets out of office. And he said quite a while ago that it would be up to his predecessor to decide when the United States pulled its troops out of Iraq. I think really the big question now is, what are the Democrats going to do? Will the anti-war sentiment among the American public elevate to the level where the Democratic Party is forced to really take the reins and cut funding for the war?
Should that really be so, John, should that really be so difficult when you have Senator Chuck Hagel, a Republican from Nebraska, speaking out against the war, when you have the Republican senator from Oregon saying that this may in fact indeed be criminal actions that the Bush administration is taking? Should it be so difficult for the Democrats to get find a way to bring the troops home?
Well, I don't think it should be so difficult for the Democrats, but in looking at the Democratic leadership and the statements they're making, so far, this isn't an option that's being promoted by the Democratic leadership. And I'm afraid that what we're going to see is the Democratic leadership really, like President Bush, sort of taking the wrong lesson from this election. I think the lesson of this election was the American public, despite the fact that they're confused and continuing to be deceived about this war, have had enough, and they want to see U.S. troops out. And after all you have to do is look at the consensus report, the National Intelligence Estimate, which was leaked to the public in the month before the election. All the major U.S. intelligence agencies concluding that not only did the war increase the terror threat against the United States and turn Iraq into what it wasn't before, which was a breeding ground for international terrorism, but that the longer U.S. troops are in Iraq, the worse the situation is. I think where we're at right now is we have a president who is unable to admit that this war was based on mistakes, lies, and deceptions, and that he's going to ride it out as long as he can until the day he's out of office. And the question is open as to whether the Democratic Party can really rise to the occasion and shut the war down, stop the bleeding, bring the troops home. You know, way back last summer, Zbigniew Brzezinski, not usually considered a peacenik, had a really simple answer on the PBS NewsHour when he was debating an advocate of keeping U.S. troops in Iraq. He said, no, we set a date, we announced we're leaving, and we pulled together an international peace conference. We bring in Syria, Iran, and we make the number one goal stability in Iraq. You know, I think this idea that, well, no one knows what to do is ridiculous.
At this
that's
point,
a pretty simple solution.
It seems obvious. And in your book, The Best War Ever Lies, Damn Lies, and The Mess in Iraq, co-authored with Sheldon Rampton, you explain this idea of incestuous amplification by the White House. What did you mean by that?
Well, when Sheldon and I wrote our first book on the Iraq War back in 2003...
Was that Banana Republicans?
No, it was Weapons of Mass Deception. It was so far our only New York Times bestseller. It came out in July of 2003. And, you know, back before the war started, it was obvious to people who were getting their information from sources other than ABC, NBC, CBS, and the mainstream U.S. news media that these three claims that supposedly justify the war that I mentioned earlier were a bunch of hooey. And so in Weapons of Mass Deception in 2003, we picked apart those claims and we analyzed Bush's propaganda. And that's where we came across this this phrase. It's a military phrase, incestuous amplification. The bottom line is that if you go to war with somebody, if you're engaged in fighting a war, you have to have absolutely the best, most honest, most reality-based information available, or else you're going to be in a terrible situation. And when you believe your own propaganda, that's called incestuous amplification. Custer was very guilty of incestuous amplification. He believed his own propaganda, and it cost him and his men their lives at the Battle of the Little Bighorn.
It has to make you wonder.
Bush, I think, has always believed his own propaganda and still does today.
It has to make you wonder if there will be Bush's last stand in Iraq at some point. My guest is John Stauber. You can find him and the Center for Media and Democracy online at prwatch.org. Congresspedia at sourcewatch.org is done with the Center for Media and Democracy and the Sunlight Foundation. The new book, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies, and The Mess in Iraq, is on bookshelves now. And coming up next, we will award the falsies. The annual awards given away by the Center for Media and Democracy. We're giving away awards about false news, fake news, and we got a lot of it this year. John Stauber will give us a lowdown and award the prizes. Nothing to be proud of. Next, here on The Rachel Maddow Show, I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel this evening on the Air America Radio Network.
This is The Rachel Maddow Show.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick and I'm all out of bubblegum.
On Air America Radio.
Stop mad cowboy design.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and, of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's terror. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
At Cash Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins, just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cash Creek Casino Resort.
49 minutes after the hour on the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. My name is Lee Rayburn, broadcasting live from Madison, Wisconsin. And there's no doubt I'm proud of where I live. I love where I live. We don't have the mountains and we don't have the great weather, but we've got some of the most amazing people, and I've been very proud to bring them to you this week through the course of this week of filling in for Rachel. And our final guest of the week is John Stauber from the Center for Media and Democracy, online at prwatch.org. And John, you have recently issued out the Falsey Awards. Explain this award ceremony that's a little bit different than the Emmys.
Well, Lee, what we do, as you know, at the Center for Media and Democracy is we investigate and we report on PR, spin, propaganda, and deception. And every year now, for the past 3 years, we've had our annual Falsies Awards. And what we do is we invite our readership to tell us what they think are the most deceiving and deceptive campaigns of the previous year, actually to vote on them. So we call them the Falsies, and we actually have awards we give out, which are Groucho glasses. If people go to our website, prwatch.org, they can read all about this year's Falsies.
But let's hand them out here, John. Give me the gold medal winner for the Falsey Awards in 2006.
Well, it's interesting. The gold medal winner went to a media corporation, ABC, the American Broadcasting Corporation,
Disney.
For its docudrama, The Path to 9/11, which Air America listeners probably remember well. This was an exploitive, right-wing, falsified story about how really 9/11, the terror attacks, occurred because of the failures of the Clinton administration. And yet ABC claimed that this was a historical docudrama, it was accurate, and it was based on the official 9/11 report. It became a huge controversy. It really blew up in the face of ABC. The advertisers were forced to back out of it. ABC took a huge bath financially, but they went ahead and they aired it, and it was really quite a creepy experience to watch this, because it aired during the week of the fifth anniversary of the 9/11 terror attack, mm-hmm. when the Bush administration was doing everything it could do to, again, try to exploit the terror attacks to win the upcoming election. And this docudrama aired over the weekend and before the fifth anniversary of 9/11, and was actually interrupted for this speech by the President of the United States from the White House, again, conflating 9/11 with Iraq. And, of course, there is no relationship between 9/11 and Iraq, but that was the main selling point of the war. So it was a horrible Orwellian moment involving the conservative folks who wrote this for ABC, and the White House, all I think geared to try to help the Bush administration win the November 7th election for Republican candidates.
Those are well-deserved Groucho Marx glasses. Let's move on to the Silver Medal Award for your Falsies of the Year from the Center for Media and Democracy.
Well, the Silver Award goes to the firms that create fake news.
VRNs, right?
Video news releases.
VNRs.
You know, we issued two reports this year. For the first time ever, we were able to document the extent to which much of the TV news that we see isn't news at all. These are news stories produced, directed, and paid for by corporations like General Motors, like Pfizer, like Monsanto. They provide these little three-minute news stories to every TV station and network in the country. And the networks air these as if they were journalism in their own reporting, when their news stories paid for by corporate interests to cast them and their products in a favorable light. They're pure corporate propaganda.
John, I'm curious to know, is there a way for media consumers to see the media, the news, and recognize the difference between real news generated from a newsroom and virtual video news releases, VNRs, that are just made for propaganda?
These things are so disguised by the TV broadcasters that it's virtually impossible to tell whether it's real news or whether it was paid for and produced by General Motors or Pfizer or Monsanto. That's why we, along with Free Press, petitioned the Federal Communications Commission, and the Federal Communications Commission is now investigating these scores of stations that we caught. And what we're asking for is that the FCC make it clear that when provided corporate or government stories are aired as news, they be labeled full-time on the screen, provided by the State Department or provided by General Motors. That is what's necessary. We're not even asking that the broadcasters not air these. If they want to air them, they can, but they have a right under they have an obligation under FCC regulations. We, the viewers, have a right to know who provided this, and the labeling would make it clear that this isn't real news. This is fake news provided by a corporation that's being run for free by TV broadcasters who are too cheap to actually hire real reporters and do real reporting.
John Stauber from the Center for Media and Democracy. We got a couple minutes left here. Quickly, our Bronze Medal Award winner for the Falsie Awards for 2006.
Well, the bronze falsy goes to all these front groups for the telecommunications industry, groups with names like Hands Off the Internet, Freedom Works, Consumers for Cable Choice, Progress and Freedom Foundation. These are organizations running all sorts of print and TV ads trying to convince us that efforts to keep the Internet open and free, to ensure the concept of net neutrality that allows organizations that don't have deep pockets to still be reached by people when they go online. These front groups try to convince people that the good guys are bad, and that the cable and phone companies are really the good guys in this big fight over who's going to control Internet access. And this is a very important fight, because it really comes down to whether the free and open Internet, which has helped so much in busting the monopoly control that a handful of corporations have over the news, is going to remain free and open, or whether it's going to become TV and radio, the real paid property of the big phone and cable companies who will determine what we can access.
John Stauber from Center for Media and Democracy, thank you so much for your time and your falsies. I'm Lee Rayburn for Rachel Maddow, who returns next week right here on Air America Radio.
Jewish people have to start. The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to. Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320. You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC.
Sacramento.
Sacramento's left channel. Because you deserve the truth.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. Is the clock ticking toward an execution? Iraqi officials claim Saddam Hussein could be hanged within just a couple of hours. CBS News correspondent David Martin begins our coverage.
U.S. officials say the Iraqi government really wants to execute him as quickly as possible. And an Iraqi spokesman said all the legal paperwork has been completed, including a red card, which is the actual execution order. But apparently there was a religious issue that was complicating the timing. A Muslim holy period begins this weekend, and there was some question whether Iraqi law permitted the execution of a Muslim on a holy day.
This is Charles Wolfson at the State Department. Asked about a report from Baghdad that Saddam Hussein would be executed by 10 p.m. Washington time, a senior State Department official said that is one possibility, but he added there are still other options. State Department officials say a cable has been sent to all U.S. diplomatic posts abroad, asking they review their security in light of the ongoing situation in Iraq.
Witnesses to the execution have been gathering in the Green Zone in Baghdad. The U.S. military has announced the deaths of three more Marines in Anbar province, bringing the monthly death toll to 106 and making December the deadliest month this year. In Palm Desert, California, 6 days of mourning for former President Gerald Ford began today.
Somber and precise, military pallbearers carried the body of Gerald Ford into the family church, while his widow Betty, their children, and grandchildren watched in silence. It was the first time the family has been seen in public since Mr. Ford's death. While family and friends bade farewell at the private service, neighbors did so in their own way.
He's been a great, great inspiration to all of us here in the desert as well. Our country, and we loved him very, very much.
Correspondent Bill Whitaker. Another winter storm has canceled flights in Denver and stranded motorists on the roadways there. The National Guardsmen called out to help rescue them. Dolly White is with the Office of Emergency Management.
Motorists are calling from their cell phones. So we've got three missions going, one in Baca County. It's a tour bus rescue, and then two for just multiple motorists that got stranded on a highway.
In Texas, tornadoes have killed one person and injured many more. Sherrold Wood is with the Limestone Medical Center in Central Texas.
We received quickly over 12 victims. And we saw injuries running from small lacerations to some serious injuries.
The president and first lady were keeping an eye on the storms.
I'm Mark Noller in Crawford, Texas. It was an afternoon of severe weather in central Texas that included tornado warnings for the area that included the president's ranch. As a precaution, the Secret Service moved Mr. and Mrs. Bush and their dogs to a tornado shelter on the ranch property.
This is CBS News.
The following is a paid commercial message.
It's estimated that over 200 million people in the U.S. suffer from herpes-caused cold sores. There are many products on the market today. Relieve One-Day Cold Sores Symptom Treatment is excellent because it relieves cold sore symptoms in just a day. Pain eases in minutes, and other symptoms resolve in just 24 hours. Relieve is non-toxic, comprised of botanical extracts, and is 100% guaranteed. Millions of sufferers have found that Relieve works best for them. Only you can determine that Relieve is best for you. You can now buy Relieve at most major stores.
Sweet! I've been waiting for lunch all day!
Me too! Natalie, I'll trade my apple for your potato chips.
I don't know, Matthew, my potato chips for your cookie.
Let's see. Billy, what's that?
Rich chocolate Ovaltine!
Rich chocolate Ovaltine!
An apple and my gummy bears for the Ovaltine?
No way!
Potato chips and grape juice for the rich chocolate Ovaltine?
No way!
Two cookies, bubblegum, and my Hershey's chocolate milk?
Double no way!
Aww! More Ovaltine, please!
A Western automotive giant has merged with a Chinese company to get a foot in the door of one of the world's fastest-growing economies. Beth Fisher of WWJ reports.
The automaker's Chrysler Group has made a deal with China's Chery Automobile to build small cars. Chairman of the Center for Automotive Research, David Cole, thinks it's a good move since Chrysler doesn't have a small car.
This has been a growing market, particularly in some of the emerging economies. We're looking at India, of course, China, and other emerging economies. This is a core product in those markets.
If approved by Chrysler's supervisory board, the cars would be built in China. Cole saying it's too expensive to build them in the U.S. Beth Fisher, CBS News, Detroit.
Crowds gathered in North Augusta, South Carolina today to pay tribute to singer James Brown, who died on Christmas Day. His gold casket on display at New York's Apollo Theater traveled to a Baptist church there. A public funeral will be held tomorrow at the James Brown Arena in Augusta, Georgia. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
Hello.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
You're listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
Politically Direct with David Bender. David's guest tonight are Robert Kennedy's press secretary, Frank Menkowitz, and from the film Bobby, actor Joshua Jackson.
I would live like a free man.
Hello and welcome to the program. Last week, concurrent with what would have been his 81st birthday and the release of the film Bobby, we looked at the life and legacy of Robert F. Kennedy. We spoke with his son Max, with friends and former advisors like Ted Sorensen, Paul Schrade, Dolores Huerta, and Rick Tuttle. And with the writer and director of Bobby, Emilio Estevez, as well as Harry Belafonte and Christian Slater, two other members of the film's stellar cast. Today we have one more show to devote to the life of Robert Kennedy, and I'm honored that his longtime friend and former press secretary, Frank Menkowitz, will be here in just a moment. Followed by Joshua Jackson, one of the other extraordinary young actors who were a part of Bobby's incredible ensemble cast. And he'll be with us in the second half of the show. But first up, I want to welcome a man who, among his many vast accomplishments, former Latin America Director of the Peace Corps, press secretary to Robert Kennedy and campaign manager for George McGovern in 1972, and currently vice chairman of one of the nation's leading public relations firms, Hill & Knowlton. But here at Air America, we know him as the father of Ben Mankiewicz, one of our very own Young Turks. And I'm honored to welcome him to the program today. Frank Mankiewicz, welcome to Politically Direct.
Thank you.
Well, all last week and now again today, we've been talking about the life and legacy of Robert F. Kennedy. And you knew Robert Kennedy very well. We're obviously an integral part of the 1968 presidential campaign. Let me start by asking, when did you first meet Bob Kennedy?
I met him, I guess, in early 1964, after the assassination of President Kennedy. I went with Sarge Shriver because I was then the Latin America director of the Peace Corps.
Right, and Sergeant Shriver had been one of the
founders. Shriver had asked me to come on special duty for a while because he had just been made the head of the War on Poverty. And so I think maybe one other person and I, but I can't remember who, had worked out a set of plans to present to Congress. And we went to see Senator Kennedy to get his approval. And we went and talked to him, and he said, sure, but it was clear that he was still shattered by the assassination of President Kennedy.
Had you known President Kennedy?
No. Met him once, but certainly not in any significant way.
So did the connection, the Peace Corps, Sergeant Shriver, was that the connection that kept you involved in a way that made it inevitable somehow or connected you to that moment when he decided to run for president? I know there was a lot of ambivalence about Robert Kennedy in 1966, 67 at the notion of running for president.
Yeah.
Were you a part of all of those discussions?
Oh, I was. You asked me when I had first met him, and that was it, that brief encounter in the Attorney General's office in 64. But then later, when I was about to leave the Peace Corps, he had just been elected to the Senate. And he called me up to say that he was about to go to Latin America. We all knew that. He was making his first sort of foreign trip and as a senator.
And that was a big deal that he was going down there.
Yes, it was.
There
was
a huge amount of press around that.
And he called me to say some friends of his told him that, that I knew a lot about Peru because I had been the country director there in the Peace Corps. And he said he wanted to check the schedule with me that the State Department had given him for Peru. And it was an absurd schedule. It limited his activities entirely to other Americans. He was going to go to the American school in the morning and have lunch with the Peruvian American Chamber of Commerce and do some other American things in the afternoon, and then a reception and dinner at the U.S. Embassy. And I said to him, Senator, why are you going to Peru to do that? You could do it all here in the U.S. And he laughed and said, yeah, he agreed, and what did I suggest? And so I proposed an alternate schedule for him, much more meaningful, much more opportunity to meet with real Peruvians. And I gather he did that pretty much wherever he went through Latin America. I met him again in Panama, where he and his traveling group had to stop over for refueling in those days. There was no nonstop flight from the U.S. to Latin America.
As the presidential discussion started, that
well,
was really...
when he came back from Latin America in 65, he asked me, one of the first things he did, he called me up and asked if I wanted to be his press secretary. And it took me maybe 10 minutes to agree.
Press secretary for the Senate.
For the Senate and obviously anything else that came along.
You had a wonderful woman working with you at that point, Melody Miller.
Yes, indeed. She went to work for Ted Kennedy afterward, and I think she's just retired.
She is just retired. I met Melody when I came to Washington as a 14- or 15-year-old. And
she wasn't much older.
She remarkable woman. But,
yes, she was.
So by 1967, people were approaching Robert Kennedy. I know one of them very well, Allard Lowenstein, came to Robert Kennedy trying to get him to consider running against Lyndon Johnson.
Right.
How did he react to that? What were the discussions privately then about his thinking?
He was very ambivalent. I think he wanted to run, but he didn't want to be a candidate. He didn't want to create that terrible conflict. He didn't want to agitate that terrible conflict between him and and President Johnson.
And the perception being that he was only running out of some kind of spite against W.J.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. As the war went on and got worse and worse, I think he began to feel that he had to run, if anything, just to stop the war.
Frank, what did you think he should have done at that time?
I wanted him to run. In fact, Joe Dolan, who was his chief of staff, he and I were very, we were on the side that he should run in 68. And we even took a couple of surreptitious steps. We put him in the California primary, for example. There was a date there where you had to file some papers or somebody had to form a committee. And we went ahead and did that even before he had decided he wanted to run.
Well, a lot of people, as I recall, I'm a native Californian, a lot of people did that just, and it was not necessarily an indicator. People were doing that to protect their right to run. And
yeah, but he wasn't protecting his right to run, and if anybody had asked him about it, I'm sure he would have denied it. What happened was we asked one of the Kennedy people in California, Ken Corey, I think.
Who went on to become state controller, didn't he?
He did indeed. And we asked Ken to get a group together to file for Kennedy for president, just anybody. And he picked up three women, I think, from his own staff or his own assembly district in Orange County. And they declared themselves, but they had to go to Sacramento to file before a certain date. And as that date approached, Ken assured us it was going to happen, but of course it didn't. His people, well, they got the wrong airplane or something. But luckily, another group that we had never heard of came along and filed. So Senator Kennedy was technically available to be in the California primary before he had decided he was going to run.
My guest is Frank Mankiewicz. We're talking about the life and legacy of Robert Kennedy. You're listening to Politically Direct on Air America Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? Want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
America. thing about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the 3 blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it, extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is, riding on the bus with poor people. New rule, call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
The best of politically direct on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. We're talking with Frank Mankiewicz. He served as Robert Kennedy's press secretary both in the United States Senate and when he was a presidential candidate in 1968. Frank, just before the break, we talked about the run-up to the presidential campaign.
Yeah.
He announced, I remember well, March 16th.
The day before St. Patrick's Day.
In the old Senate caucus room where his brother had announced.
Yep.
That was an extraordinary day because a lot of people saw that as the moment where perhaps we had a chance to really turn our policy around, a time that's enormously similar to, you know, where we are today. When you're looking at someone to step forward and say, this is wrong, our country's going in the wrong direction, this is a war we shouldn't have been in from the start, the parallels are striking. It must be incredible to you to hear some of the exact same language used today that was used in 1967 and 68.
Including stay the course.
Including stay the course, which, as we know, is no longer a phrase that this president even admits to having said.
Yeah, I guess he's moved on.
moving on would be a good thing. But that 68 campaign launched in March, and I, you know, in going back and doing this series of shows, it's amazing to me that it really amounted to 10 or 11 weeks. It was an intense and an extraordinary time. Did you travel with Senator Kennedy all across the country, Indiana, Nebraska, those primaries?
Yes, I did.
What were the crowds like?
I've never seen or heard even of any crowds like that since. They were not just enormous, but they were demonstrative. They wanted to touch him. They wanted to get as close as they could. They wanted to talk to him. He really inspired people in an extraordinary way, whether they were small groups or large ones.
Well, it was deeply emotional, and to the point where there was concern, not in a sense of someone attacking him to harm him, but people, through adulation, were ripping his cufflinks. Didn't he run through a pair of cufflinks every day?
Yeah, it's true. And you have to remember, we had no Secret Service protection.
People don't remember that. They don't realize that it wasn't issued to presidential candidates until after.
That's right. It was his assassination that led to the creation of Secret Service accompanying presidential candidates.
But at the time, you were doing it with people like Bill Berry. And
me.
And you were pressed into service to hold him on to...
Yeah, Bill and I were sort of bodyguards.
I didn't know that was part of your resume.
Yeah. Not all the time, but often.
And that must have been, again, you described it. I, as a kid, I saw some of those crowds. And I remember one in downtown Los Angeles, maybe 3 weeks before the primary, there was a rally at Alvera Street,
mm-hmm.
which is the old Spanish street going back to the early days of Los Angeles.
Right.
The rally was scheduled for noon, and it was a hot day, I recall. He didn't show up by 12:30, by 1 o'clock, by 1:30, by 2 o'clock. And instead of the crowd getting angry, it got bigger.
Yeah. He had a reputation for being late to those meetings, and it was always because the crowds at his earlier meetings were always much louder and larger and more demonstrative than the advanced people had anticipated, so that he was unable to get away in time.
Well, he got there by 4 o'clock, Frank. And,
I'm not surprised.
And there were 10,000 people waiting for him.
In the plaza down there at Alvaro Street.
That's right.
Yeah.
You were there that day, yes?
I sure was.
Yeah. Still, it's just etched in my memory that he was moving through the sea of humanity, and it's little wonder that it took him a while, because no one could move. It was so packed.
You know, I remember, too, a day just before the Indiana primary, must have been early May, he took a motorcade. We rode in a motorcade. He had an open car, of course, a convertible, from South Bend, Indiana, where he had spoken at Notre Dame in the morning, to Chicago. Now, that's a distance, I think, of about 40 or 50 miles. And it goes through a number of small, largely working-class communities in northern Indiana and Illinois. And it was just astonishing what happened. I don't think any member of the media who was along on that trip or any of the Kennedy staff will ever forget it. The crowds were jammed on both sides of the street. Many people had brought their little kids and put them to sleep on the hoods of cars, waiting for Senator Kennedy to come by. He was riding with, alternately, Mayor Hatcher of Gary, who at that time was one of the first black mayors to be elected anywhere, and Tony Zale, who was a former middleweight champion of the world and a great favorite in northern Indiana. And it was just an astonishing day, just one huge crowd after another lining the sides of the road as we drove by. And, of course, it took much longer than anyone had anticipated. I think it was dark by the time we got to Chicago. But it was just the kind of day that you're describing. People waited. They were willing to wait hours to see Senator Kennedy pass by.
That must have had, it did on all of us, I know, a transforming effect. What effect did that have on Senator Kennedy as he watched this outpouring over the course of week after week as he moved around the country? It's the first time he'd really done that since 1960, when his brother was alive.
Yeah, I don't know the impact on him. I think he was obviously deeply impressed. And it made him realize that this was more than just a political campaign. It was really a movement. It was a time when it seemed as though the country could actually change. And I think it would have. And he very much sensed that he had become a part of something larger. It really was a transcendent moment, spring of 1968, for a lot of reasons, but in the U.S., mostly because of Robert Kennedy.
What do you think Robert Kennedy's legacy should be for people who never knew him? Many are learning about him for the first time by seeing some of the footage that's in this film, Bobby, that's out now. If you had something you hope people could take away from this in terms of understanding Robert Kennedy and what he meant to our politics, what would it be?
I think hope and a sense that things could be different. He was of our generation. A new breed, a new kind of person. He spoke directly. I mean, if you go to see this movie, Bobby, it's extraordinary for that reason. It will show a whole new generation of Americans what we lost in 1968. I mean, we haven't had any political candidates like that since. We may never have them again. There are some scenes where he's just talking to ordinary voters in Mississippi and in Illinois. And he's not talking like any candidate we know of. It was all so totally different. And he clearly was thinking very seriously and clearly about what needed to be done in America. I'd urge everybody to go see that movie for no other reason than to watch the tape.
Frank Mankiewicz, perhaps the word hope is the word that we can all take away. And clearly you've given your life to public service, so from a very dark time, you maintain some hope going on to manage George McGovern's campaign and continuing to work in public service in a variety of ways for so many years. We're so honored to have you on this program, and again, to have Ben Mankiewicz's father here with us on Politically Direct.
That's how I'm going to be known, I guess.
Well, that's how you're known here, and believe me, it's a badge of honor. Again, thank you for joining us today, and all the best, sir.
Thank you.
You're listening. listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
$9.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Halls Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sim.
To understand it,
Mitt Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy. See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You got all, you think you got all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
If Romney gets the nomination, the tunnels win. Think about it. Tourists, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott! It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
At Cash Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpot start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cash Creek Casino Resort.
No more cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate. And then up your... All right, new rule. No more
celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
And politically direct on Air America Radio.
And welcome back. All this past week, we've been talking about the life and legacy of Robert F. Kennedy, concurrent with what would have been his 81st birthday last week, and the release of the film Bobby. We've spoken with the film's writer and director, Emilio Estevez, with Harry Belafonte, with Christian Slater. And now, joining us by telephone from Vancouver is Joshua Jackson, who plays Wade Buckley, a young campaign manager in the film. Josh Jackson, thanks for joining us on Politically Direct.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, let me go back to the beginning, as I have with the other members of the cast that I've spoken with. How did you first hear about this project?
Well, the beginning of the project for me was actually way back when. I'm sure Emilio told you the script was finished, I believe, in early 2001.
Right. He started working on it in 2000.
In 2000, yeah. So I had actually read it all those years ago, and the character group, I guess, that I was age-appropriate for was obviously different than the one I ended up playing, but then because of the vagaries of the movie business, it took a couple of years for the film to come together. And when it did, finally, I was of the age to play this guy. And then, frankly, I just auditioned. They'd already hired Nick, so I went in with Nick. And
Nick Cannon.
Did the audition, and Emilio offered me the job.
Well, let's tell people who don't know and who may not have seen The Mighty Ducks, and I think there are at least five people left who haven't seen it, that you had worked with Emilio much of your teen years. You'd shot those films with him, and you'd come to know him fairly well, long before this movie came to be.
At 13, 15, and 17, we made the first, second, and third of those films. And while he didn't have much to do in the third film, he'd sort of moved on to greener pastures at that point. Frankly, he taught me how to be an actor off camera, which is an important and not often talked about portion of our business.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm sure you picked it up in speaking with him. He is he's a very passionate but a very humble and very hardworking guy, and he brings that workmanlike belief to acting. He believes in respecting not only the material that you're working on, but the people that you're working with, and being on time and being professional. And at 13, I was completely overwhelmed by the whole experience, had no idea which way was up, and I certainly didn't know what it meant to be a professional actor. And he was the one that sort of, mostly by example, occasionally by specific instruction, but mostly by example, just showed all of us kids down there how to be actors.
And he sort of came by it in much the same way, having watched his dad grow up.
Exactly. What's amazing to me is Emilio is the son of a movie star and a movie star in his own right, and had great and wild success. And a lot of second generation guys, people who I've met certainly in Los Angeles, feel a sense of entitlement to that. And he, even though growing up is part, one of those Hollywood royalty families, I've never sensed that on him. I've never felt like he felt entitled to a job or position. And he comes at it from, from a very workmanlike place.
Well, have you come to know Martin at all, his dad?
I mean, I've met him a couple of times. I never got to know him. And also, you have to remember, even though we worked together, we didn't really work as peers. I was a child, right? So
sure.
He was always, I always looked up to Emilio. It wasn't that we were two guys sitting around having a beer.
at which point he'd be eligible for president, because that's apparently the criterion we use to select our president.
Sad and true statement.
Yeah, but I spent a little over a year working on Howard Dean's presidential campaign, and I actually, Martin Sheen was one of Dean's supporters.
My first ever political contribution was Howard Dean.
Well, good for you. A lot of people's, actually. And
yeah.
And one of the things that I had the privilege of doing was taking Martin Sheen to the town of Bartlett, New Hampshire. And talk about a rock star moment. I think the entire town of 300 showed up. But what I got from Martin Sheen, and I'd met him over the years and had known him somewhat casually, but in the couple days that we traveled together, is exactly what you just described about Emilio, who I do not know. We've spoken now around this film, but that same sense of humility, the sense of passion and commitment, but having, you know, a sense of purpose without taking yourself too seriously.
Too seriously, and feeling like you have a right. There's a lot of people in all walks of life, frankly. It's not endemic to acting alone.
Let's bring it back to Bobby, because I was reading and preparing to talk with you that you actually got it, a sort of a primer history lesson, the cast did, from Emilio, that he showed you footage from 68 and the campaign and what mm-hmm. happened that night. Tell me about that experience.
Well, he had a package of materials that I think were, a lot of which were just his source materials, but all of the CBS footage in the ballroom, and then also, like you said, a lot of newsreel footage, radio interviews that he'd done on the campaign trail in late 67 and the beginning of 68, and then recordings of some of his speeches, the most poignant of which plays over the end of the film.
Again, for people who have yet to see this movie, and I want you to turn off, I'm going to do Howard Beale now, I want you to turn off your radio, turn it off. Get out of your room and go see this movie right now.
I agree. It's worth your $10 just for the final 20 minutes of the film. I can also say I have never experienced this on a film. Universally, everybody I have met who I have talked to about this film who is alive at the time, whether or not they were at the Ambassador, has their story to tell, remembers exactly where they were, what they were doing. It's a moment seared into the collective conscious.
You're 28, is that
mm-hmm. what? That's obviously before me.
And you were born just almost exactly 10 years after
exactly,
this happened.
Yeah. Actually, almost exactly. I'm
right.
in 11th, 1978.
And as I have read, you know, some of your comments about this, the moment that you analogize this to for your generation is Kurt Cobain.
Yeah. It was the end of our childhood, because there was also, and the 60s were, it seems, a more revolutionary time, but for my generation, we had our moment in the sun. There was the Rio Earth Summit. There was this movement in music, you know, this American punk music, which was called grunge. There was this feeling of possibility with Clinton getting elected. There was a feeling of political engagement. It was before the dot-com boom and before we went back into Gordon Gekko land of greed is good. And there was this feeling of people taking ownership. I also grew up in Vancouver, so there was a real, you know, this is a liberal city. But you know, I feel like the youth of America also felt engaged. And then when Kurt Cobain was shot, it seemed that began the cascade of things that just ended that feeling.
Josh, do you consider yourself, you have dual citizenship, right? Do you consider yourself Canadian, American, both?
Well, I consider myself both, actually.
Yeah.
And I identify very heavily with my Canadian-ness, and I was raised here. But I also identify very heavily with my American-ness. And it's a double bind. People either are willing to accept that or not willing to accept that, but I feel equally of America as I do of Canada.
Well, let me say this. If the Democrats had not just won, I would be trying to find a way to come share your Canadian-ness. And this is really interesting, this period of time, because, again, we're at this moment in history. You talked about Howard Dean earlier. There's a moment now where people are beginning to say, can we dare to hope again? And for me, having started my political activism in 1968, there were only two ways to go. It was to completely walk away after that night and never get back involved, or really carry on with what Robert Kennedy was committed to, which was to trying to make the world a better place. And it's a very difficult thing, because sometimes you feel like Charlie Brown in the football.
Of course. And frankly, your generation was Charlie Brown in the football. It wasn't one punch. I mean, you just kept on, the hits just kept on coming.
Yeah, lucky us.
You lost JFK, you lost Martin Luther, you lost Malcolm X, you lost Medgar Evers, you lost RFK. You know, that's enough political assassinations for 10 generations.
Yeah.
But to have them happen in the span of, what was it, 4 years, 5 years?
I've read that you've said that your parents were very socially conscious and active politically. So you were talking about this kind of stuff from a very early age.
Yeah. Well, my parents separated. I don't know my father. He left when I was 2 years old, really. But my mother is very, very. My mother is a Irish Catholic immigrant who grew up in, you know, was sort of coming of age in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
So the Kennedys are like totemistic.
Absolutely. It's hard to describe, really, the adoration and what exactly the Kennedys represent to Ireland, especially for somebody growing up. You know, Ireland is going through a boom time right now, but in the 50s and 60s, there were really no opportunities for native Irish living in the Republic. And the Kennedys represented the actual embodiment of the American dream. So my mother's association with Robert Kennedy, she got to come down and go to the premiere, and she was shattered after the movie. You know, her actual words to me, and you can't write stuff like this, were, I had forgotten how much I lost. You know, you put those things, you go on about your daily life, but she was just shattered after the film.
I don't want to put people off of this. The film has some very difficult moments, but it also has an enormously uplifting quality.
And yeah, well, that's what broke her heart was not, I mean, tragedy ultimately, which has to be laid through this film, is not the message. And, you know, tragedy in film is not the most heartbreaking part. What really broke her heart, what shattered her coming out, was exactly that uplift, was exactly listening to the man's words and hearing, you know, these messages of transcendence and hope and possibility. That was what she was sad that had gone out of sort of her youth, I guess, at that moment. It wasn't that, you know, that a life was lost, which is, of course, tragic. She felt like some greater part of her and her generation had died in that moment. I hope people wouldn't be turned off by a movie where, you know, they know the ending, but this message, the movie is not about death and despair. It is, I mean, you walk out of this film, I hope, feeling completely inspired and overwhelmed by the challenge that is in his words. And it's with the brilliance of Emilio not casting an actor to play Bobby Kennedy. He actually challenged, as a politician, he challenged his constituents and Americans in general to be better than they were.
My guest is Joshua Jackson. He's one of the stars of the film Bobby. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Politically Direct on Air America Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. Your own personal Internet. That is you and me. You and me is that. Well, tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the Truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? Want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to stackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's stackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, stackjobs.com is a click away. At stackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone.
Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag. It's a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320. Torque with Scott and Sim.
Pamela Falk, a joy talking to you.
Well, you know I'm your biggest fan. You go from hilariously funny to unbelievably informed.
And then they cry.
And then they cry.
Scott and Sim, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
And we're back. My guest is Josh Jackson. He is one of the stars of the film Bobby, which is playing nationwide. If anyone who's listening to this hasn't seen the movie, shame on you. And
stop listening immediately.
And yes, this is we're done here.
Yeah.
my work here is done. I want to talk to you actually about your career because, interestingly to me, you just finished shooting another film which has a political message, Battle in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Tell people what that's about.
Battle in Seattle is the story of the World Trade Organization protests in 1999 and the riots that broke out. It uses a similar sort of device to tell the story. There are probably 10 or 15 different characters giving you the different perspectives of what was going on over the course of those 3 days. But unlike Bobby, which is by necessity it's a political film because it's about a political figure, I don't really feel like there's a partisan side picked. It's hard for me to imagine that anybody would disagree that justice and equity and hope are good things.
Have you talked to Dick Cheney lately?
I know. I mean, it is... Coming from, so we're both on the same side of the political spectrum, and I grew up in very liberal Vancouver, son of a very liberal mother, and I'm a very liberal man. But I do wonder sometimes if I'm not just barking in the wind, given
now,
the current political climate.
You're, in fact, part of the vanguard of what is bringing us back into a time when you can say liberal without it being, you know, a word that people have to run away from.
Yeah, which I never really understood, frankly. First off, as a young person, you should never call yourself conservative about anything. Not a good place for you to be. Be progressive. I think that's a healthy mindset to have as a young person.
It's a healthy mindset to have at any age, actually.
Yeah, well, certainly. But to be calcified in your ideas, just from a... Anyway, that's a different discussion.
No, it's a fair point. Is that, and you know, it's someone always trots out, I think, Churchill on this subject, that, you know, if you're... what is it? If you're conservative when you're young, you have no heart. And if you're liberal when you're old, you have no brain.
Right.
And, you know, I think I'm an admirer of Churchill, but I think he drank too heavily at the end. and I think that was the problem with that line. You know, frankly, being smart is right at any age.
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
And having said that, you've made these choices now, and that was sort of my purpose in asking you about Battle in Seattle. You waited and stayed involved, you know, and Emilio talked about how long it took to get Bobby made. You wanted to be a part of this film.
Mm-hmm.
You made this. I also note that you made were part of a very special project for HBO, the Laramie Project,
mm-hmm.
which moved me very deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's the 10th anniversary of Matthew Shepard's death.
Well, you're going to be doing something. Aren't you doing a reading at Town Hall?
It's two things. It's one is his mother, mm-hmm. Who runs the Matthew Shepard Foundation, is doing their annual fundraiser, and they're doing it in accordance with the Tectonic Theater Company, who created the play of the Laramie Project.
Tell people what it is, Josh, if they aren't familiar with it.
The Laramie Project is nearly impossible to describe as a dramatic structure. It is the story of the aftermath of Matthew Shepard's death, And I'm just going to assume that everybody remembers Matthew Shepard, who was...
I hope that they do.
Yeah.
And if they don't, they shouldn't be listening to my show.
Yeah, exactly right. If they don't, they have found themselves on a very, very unfamiliar ground on the dial there. And it is the story as told through the theater company itself and people in Laramie, Wyoming. And it is recreations of some actual conversations and then a couple of dramatized pieces. It doesn't really follow any traditional structure, so it's hard to describe. But what it is ultimately is it's a slice of Americana in this really traumatic moment in a town's life, but also in the nation's life.
And you were part of the HBO production of this.
Mm-hmm.
Again, talk about choices. This was, trust me, involved in something that had a deep impact on the consciousness of our country.
Yeah. Every once in a while, and I wish I could say that my whole career in life could be based around movies like this, but every once in a while you have a chance to be in a film that appeals beyond just the actor in you. It appeals to something that you socially or politically really connect with, and I've had now the chance to be a part of three films like that. I have a little piece here in Battle in Seattle, and I had my piece in Bobby, and certainly the Laramie Project is of that ilk as well. So it doesn't happen all that often, and frankly, not every movie needs to have a political overtone to it. I have no problem with pure entertainment.
Wait a minute. You were in something called Dawson's Creek, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, actually, frankly, this is going to be a hard argument to make, but I actually think Dawson's Creek is one of the more socially subversive television shows ever put on TV.
I've met Kevin Williamson, and I suspect that there is some truth to that.
There's a couple of big things that we did that I'm very proud of. That I obviously, I didn't write the show, so I didn't get to choose them. But I thought it was very, very progressive to have an out character who could be, just a regular human being whose gayness didn't become the entirety of his personality as soon as he came out.
It was hugely important.
Which I thought was hugely important, frankly. But I also think that given the eloquence of those kids at that age and the frankness in which they talked about sex, which is something, it's another huge taboo in America, I actually thought that was a very progressive thing to do as well. The open channels of dialogue where kids were allowed to actually speak about sex and having it and not having it and what the ramifications or repercussions were in an environment where they weren't talked down to. Their decisions were valid and their ideas were valid and listened to.
So with the Dawson's Creek reunion movie, we will expect to see Pacey running for president. That's clearly the evolution of what you've just described.
Have Pacey for president, that would be kind of funny, actually.
It would be kind of funny. Well, let me ask you a serious question. Here you are, you've talked very eloquently about issues and things of concern to you. Have you ever thought about politics as... It turns out that actors actually have some potential in this profession.
Which is both good and bad, I think.
Well, the founding fathers never intended for it to be only attorneys.
No, certainly not only attorneys, and certainly not also only MBAs and this very small clique of people. But the skill set that actors bring that makes them so attractive is unfortunately their acting, which is also not something that I think is a particularly healthy.
Well, it's I'll flip that around and say it's also their ability to communicate. And
certainly.
It always struck me that Ronald Reagan was so gifted. Had he remained the Democrat he'd been growing up, he would have led the country in exactly the opposite direction through the power of his ability to persuade.
Absolutely.
And I thought our mistake was not developing young Ronald Reagans. No offense.
Absolutely none taken.
And we have to go, but I want to give credit to you. This is a remarkable film. You're terrific in it.
Thank you.
And I do hope that people turned this off about 20 minutes ago and went to go see this movie. But if they haven't, this is your chance. Bobby, it's playing anywhere near you. Go see it today. Josh Jackson, thanks for joining us on Politically Direct. Come back and talk to us again.
Thank you. I would love to.
CBS News. I'm Cammie McCormick. According to one Iraqi official, Saddam Hussein could be executed within the hour, but there's been no official announcement. Even President Bush is awaiting word.
I'm Mark Noller in Crawford, Texas. Having referred to Saddam Hussein as a brutal murderer, there's no question that President Bush thinks Saddam deserves to be executed. But the White House does not want to be seen in any way pulling strings or orchestrating the imposition of the death sentence, pointing out that it's a matter to be handled by the sovereign nation of Iraq.
The execution could be carried out soon after the U.S. military hands Saddam over to the Iraqis. He will go to the gallows along with his half-brother. The hanging will be videotaped and witnesses will be present. CBS News correspondent Randall Pinkston is in Baghdad.
Iraq's national security advisor told CBS News that Saddam's body will be treated with respect.
He will have the same, if you like, ceremony or ritual according to the Islamic law. And he will be buried according to the Islamic rituals.
There is concern the violence could increase even further after the execution. The U.S. military is on high alert. Three more Marines have been killed in fighting in Anbar province. That makes December the deadliest month for U.S. troops this year. 6 days of national mourning have begun for former President Gerald Ford. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman is in Palm Desert, California.
The series of services honoring President Ford began here in the place he called home for three decades and in the church he attended. A Marine band played as the casket arrived. A multi-service honor guard brought the casket into the church, and Mr. Ford's pastor prayed.
Deliver your servant Gerald, O sovereign Lord Christ, from all evil.
After a private family prayer service, the public was allowed to view the casket and pay respects. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Palm Desert, California.
Denver's second big snowstorm of the holidays has canceled more flights, stranded bus travelers, and motorists on area roadways. The National Guard's been called out to help. Polly White is with the Office of Emergency Management.
It looked a little bit like the snow was letting up, and I think that these folks thought that, you know, maybe they could get to the store and get back in time, and then the wind picks up and the snow drifts come up and they find themselves in a jam that they just can't get out of.
This latest storm could dump a foot or more of snow through tomorrow. Tornadoes swept across central Texas today, killing one person and injuring more than a dozen, and at one point forcing the president and first lady to take an armored vehicle to a storm shelter there in Crawford, Texas. They didn't have to use that shelter after all. Things were looking positive a couple of days ago with the Dow's record close, but it finished the year on another note, down 38 points for the day at 12,463. Still, the blue chips are up 16% for the year and crossed the 12,000 mark for the first time. This is CBS News.
Deck the halls with
boughs of holly.
Ah, the sounds of TomTom portable navigation devices singing in sweet harmony. And now through the holiday season, if you buy any TomTom, you get $100 off.
$100 off.
It's the TomTom Give event. You give a TomTom, we give you $100 off any model at any retailer. So give the best portable everyday GPS solution. Heck, give two. TomTom, find your way the easy way.
$100 off.
Coffee?
Thanks.
Introducing Splenda, flavor blends for coffee and French vanilla, mocha, and hazelnut. They add delicious flavor that takes you someplace else.
Mmm. I'm ready for takeoff. Ah, smell that luscious vanilla air. Wow, I'm good. I could do this on one ski. I am on one ski. Shimmering vanilla moguls beckon. I see gold medals in it.
Miss, please, sit down. The captain has turned on the seatbelt sign.
Oh, sure. Right.
New Splenda, flavor blends for coffee. Visit them at VanillaFlavorBlends.com. Find them in the coffee aisle.
AT&T has completed its buyout now of Bell South. It's a deal worth $86 billion. It is the largest telecommunications takeover in history, and it came after some marathon negotiations with lawyers for the company and the FCC.
The new and soon-to-be bigger AT&T had to accept some conditions, but after agreeing, it got the okay from federal regulators to buy up Bell South and also to get total control of Singular Wireless. AT&T promises some temporary form of network neutrality, that it will not put internet traffic that brings it money on express lanes of the information superhighway, possibly at the speed expense of other traffic. It also agrees to hold the rates on high-speed internet access for 2.5 years. In exchange for those and other concessions, the Federal Communications Commission unanimously approved AT&T's $86 billion buyout of Bell South. Tom Foti, CBS News, Washington.
She was on the job only 6 months and she was fired, but JCPenney's giving its former CEO, Catherine West, $10 million in severance. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS.
New rule. one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next, burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
Best of Eco Talk with Betsy Rosenberg on Air America Radio.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
And welcome to the ostrich-free zone of EcoTalk. I'm Betsy Rosenberg, and we're going to be talking today about jet-set diplomacy, rock stars, a former mermaid and sometimes literal tree-hugger, and also a company that promises a radically different type of luxury. First, about that jet-set diplomacy, Patrick McCauley, who joined us last month, is going to be giving us an update. He is the executive director of International Rivers Network. He chatted with us, you may recall, before heading off to Nairobi for the latest round of UN climate talks, and having been to several of these climate discussions before, he was afraid it would mostly be talk about talks. Well, we're finding out now that there's some things that did get accomplished and some things that didn't. Then we'll hear how Green Day is teaming up with NRDC, one of our partners, to engage their fans in working for a greener day ahead. With some 85 million albums sold, well, they can turn all that green into green and all kinds of possibilities emerging there. In our second half, Treehugger Thursday will feature an extended interview with Daryl Hannah, who, while having often shied away from the spotlight as a celebrity, has never been afraid to speak out on the issue she is most passionate about. And finally, Anna Walker of Anna Sova, a company that will sell you the most luxurious eco-safe home products available for this holiday season. I want to thank another one of our partners, and that is the Union of Concerned Scientists. It's a science-based nonprofit combining independent research and citizen action to achieve innovative solutions for a healthy environment and a safer world. Find them on the web at ucsusa.org. Well, earlier this month, we spoke to Patrick McCauley, executive director of International Rivers Network, before he headed off for Nairobi for those talks. He is a somewhat weary veteran of these discussions, and his preview of this round was, well, that it would mostly be talk about talking. Well, now he's back to tell us about what happened and what did not get accomplished. Welcome back, Patrick.
Thanks, Betsy. Nice to be back.
So you were hopeful that some progress would be made. Were your hopes confirmed, or were your worst fears confirmed, or both?
Neither. It was neither all bad or all good. There was no clear decisions were made at the talks, but they did at least agree to continue talking, and that's basically all was achieved.
Mm-hmm.
The big fear now is that there may be a gap between the end of the Kyoto Protocol in 2012 and whatever comes next, and the environmentalists there were wearing T-shirts saying, mind the gap and let's start accelerating these talks, move from talks about talks to real talks, but that didn't really happen. And so what was agreed is that in 2008 there will be a review of the Kyoto Protocol, and that it is assumed should lead to a new phase of Kyoto or a non-Kyoto, post-Kyoto deal. But the problem is it can take a long time, of course, for these negotiations to happen. So if they start talking in 2008, it can take a year or two to reach a new agreement. And then after the agreement is reached in these talks, then the governments have to take it away and they all have to ratify it, which was a very slow process, but a five-year process in Kyoto. So if that happens again, unfortunately, there's going to be a period when we're not in a regime where governments have commitments to actually reduce their emissions.
And in the U.S., always on the sidelines in this issue, throw another wrench into negotiations, or are they just staying entrenched?
They stayed entrenched. They maintain a very obstructionist position, although I think this year people in Nairobi felt that the U.S. wasn't quite as bad in terms of actively trying to sabotage the process as they had been in previous years. I think the midterm elections, it was felt had an impact in the U.S. position. And there was good news coming out of Washington the first time. There was a letter circulating from Barbara Boxer and Lieberman and Bingham from the Senate, who are all going to be heading Senate committees next year, and saying that global warming is going to be a priority of theirs, and trying to get action from the U.S. will be a priority. So that was cheered people up somewhat. In general, though, people feel that there's no hope of U.S. leadership in this issue until Bush is out of office, and so people think that the talks in 2009, there is a chance that the U.S. could show leadership there and that maybe we really could move forward.
And that, of course, gives shelter for China and India to hide behind the U.S. cloak.
Yeah, it gives shelter for a lot of countries that don't want to take action. Disappointing in these talks specifically was the position of Canada, who has previously been quite a progressive, one of the more progressive countries. And this year, you know, they have a new prime minister, Stephen Harper, who's sort of a Bush light or a Bush of the North, and that's really the position they were playing was very obstructionist, and people are very disappointed. The Canadian Environment Minister, Rhona Ambrose, most of my Canadian friends have been saying basically she's been an embarrassment to Canada and brought sort of internal Canadian politics into her speech at the climate negotiations, and a very negative role played there. Australia also played a very negative role, but that's been the case for some years now, so it's not so surprising that, as usual, the Europeans are the most progressive voices, and especially the Germans. And the new German environment minister, his speech was very warmly welcomed. And the Germans are talking about taking on serious commitments and trying to get the EU take on serious commitments. And Germany is about to take on the six-month presidency of the EU, and also they're going to be have the presidency of the G8 next year. So they're talking about trying to push things forward.
Okay, and one of the main issues I know that was on the table was the burden that poor countries and developing nations bear for what has primarily been, you know, climate crisis fueled by the richer developed, so-called developed countries. What did you see in terms of any agreement to allocate more funds to Africa for clean technology? And by holding the conference in Kenya, did that shine any more spotlight on those particular challenges there, that part of the world?
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about Africa's needs, both in terms of adaptation, meaning that Africa is going to, widely agreed, is going to suffer most from climate change and has the least ability to deal with it, so it needs money for new technologies and practices that will make them less vulnerable, especially to floods and droughts, and then also the need for technology transfer and clean technology for Africa. The adaptation issue was especially pressing in the front of people's minds because it rained almost every day that the talks were going on, and there was massive floods going on in East Africa. 2 million people being displaced in northern Kenya and southern Somalia, 100 people killed. So it's very obvious that Africa is already suffering the impacts of climate change, and people are dying. There was some movement. There are various different adaptation funds that are set up under the Kyoto Protocol, and on one of these funds, there was agreement, finally, after years of discussions, on sort of what the structure of the fund was actually going to be. No agreement, sadly, on any major increases of money into the fund, but at least now there sort of is the governance for the fund agreed so that money can start flowing.
Now, I understand a lot of environmental groups that were there said that the measures presented and accepted still just do not match the scale of the problem. Was that an overall take-home message as well?
Yes. I mean, everybody is very aware of that. When the scientists are talking, they're saying, okay, we need cuts of 70% maybe in emissions from the rich countries, and that we need the developing world to start limiting their emissions in the next 10 years or so. But this is not what the politicians are talking about. I mean, obviously we have the U.S. and now Canada, Australia are not really prepared to take on any discussion of cuts, and Europeans are talking serious cuts, but you know, Europe can't do it alone. There's a lot of other countries are going to have to take action, and the developing country position, I mean, the big developing countries, China, India, lesser extent Brazil, are, it's very important that at some point they are brought into the whole framework of commitments for action. And China and India, their position is, look, we're not going to talk about cuts at all until we see a lot of action from the north and deep cuts in the north. And then we have countries like the U.S. say, well, we're not going to agree on anything until we see China and India taking the lead. So we get this stalemate. And I think it's going to require a new government in Washington to really be able to break this stalemate. And people are talking about various ways around it, you know, various sort of confidence-building measures for southern countries to say, look, okay, we will provide money from the north, we will take action in the north, and now, you know, it's time for you also to agree that you have to, will have to take on limits and start to really implement clean technologies and start seriously moving away from fossil fuels.
And the next round of talks scheduled for about a year from now in Bali?
Yeah, that's it. The whole circus will reconvene and see if they can get any further next time.
Thank you for that download very much. We've been speaking with Patrick McCulley, Executive Director of the International Rivers Network, covering the UN climate talks most recently in Nairobi. We'll be hearing from you later. I hope there's going to be some follow-up between now and Bali.
Thanks a lot, Betsy.
Okay, and we'll be back right after these messages with more EcoTalk news and views, and we'll take a look at, some interesting things on the horizon from NRDC correspondent Daniel Heinerfeld, Green Day in particular.
This is the best of EcoTalk on Air America Radio. A liberal dose of the truth.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. Now, Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions of folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's fair. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320. At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins, just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635,
sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Want to get to the...
New rule. Jewish people have to start... The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to... Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Real logs that they broadcast,
what,
you know,
like
every year.
Crackling
just
noise?
The crackling noise. That, I think that's kind of the endearment that people find appealing about us.
It's true. Tune in for something that sounds a little bit like static. Monday through Friday, 5:39. The Morning Retort with Scott and Sims.
You bet it.
Welcome back to Eco Talk, and you've probably heard of the group Green Day. I've always wondered if they were really green or that was just their name. Well, they are going to be living up to it very soon here. I'm ready starting, actually. Having sold some 85 million records worldwide, Green Day is one of the most successful bands of all time. It's also one of the most socially conscious and outspoken groups around. Billy Joe, Mike, and Trey have never been afraid to speak their minds about issues such as the war in Iraq or the Bush administration's lack of response to Hurricane Katrina. Now the band has teamed up with our partner, the Natural Resources Defense Council, to engage Green Day fans in green activism. The NRDC's Daniel Heinerfeld reports.
If you're at a computer, check out greendaynrdc.com. It's the online hub of the Move America Beyond Oil campaign, where you can send messages directly to political leaders, get tips on how to cut oil dependence, and see exclusive video messages from Green Day.
Is all the sound all right?
Good.
Me. You.
Check.
Yeah, how's that?
Get your oil. Oil.
And here we have a serious problem. America is addicted to oil.
George W. Bush admitted the truth. We're addicted to oil. Instead of kicking the habit, he's making us more dependent. Oil companies are collecting bigger profits than any companies in history.
But we're paying more for gas and suffering from global warming.
The guy at NRDC behind the collaboration with Green Day is Jordan Kessler. He said the band's audience is a natural fit for an environmental organization like NRDC.
I think punk rockers have always been very concerned about the world around them and have always been unafraid to make statements about what they care about and making changes in the world. Green Day is a fantastic example of that, especially now with their most recent album, American Idiot, which is full of rich discourse on topics that are affecting the world right now, such as the war in Iraq.
Don't want to be an American idiot. Don't want a nation under the new media.
Well, I think NRDC is a very rebellious place. We tend to speak the truth to power. And I think that the rebellious spirit of Green Day really reflects that same kind of outlook. And that makes Green Day a great match for NRDC.
In a new video to be released next month on the website, Green Day's lead singer and guitarist, Billy Joe Armstrong, talks about how a rebellious spirit is a crucial part of growing up in America.
When you look at what the definition of a democracy, what it's supposed to be, it's a government run by the population. And we elect these people in the office. So therefore, to keep in mind that we have control over these bastards that are making decisions for us. And I think it's okay and very rebellious to take on responsibility. And that directly relates to, you know, growing up.
For NRDC, the collaboration with Green Day is about inspiring a new generation to solve the environmental problems they've been handed. Again, Jordan Kessler.
I think youth outreach is incredibly important right now because so many of the people who support the environmental movement are perhaps a little older and came to it back at the time that it was founded in the 1970s. So now we're looking at a whole new generation of people and a whole new set of unbelievably frightening problems. So it's important to reach these folks when they're young because it's their well-being that's going to be affected by what's going on.
The administration can force car companies to make more efficient vehicles. It could support alternative fuels, and it could order government agencies to buy hybrid cars. We've got the solutions, but we need the leadership in Washington. You can help by going to greendaynrdc.com. Contact the President and Congress. Demand that they move America beyond oil.
Get a price tag bag on a monument.
To sign up at greendaynrdc.com, you can also send the text message GD to the short code 30644. For EcoTalk and NRDC, this is Daniel Heinerfeld in Los Angeles.
Thank you, Daniel, and thank you, Green Day. And now an eco tip to help green your day. This from Just the Environmental Facts Man from our friends at Nerdy Books. Well, if you ever wondered how much garbage we Americans create, well, just try carrying it around in a backpack for a day, just everything that you would normally throw away, and you'll see very quickly that it adds up. Here are some more landfill facts that will motivate you to reduce, reuse, and recycle more. Also rot, that's composting. Well, every day in this country of ours, we produce enough garbage to fill 100,000 garbage trucks. Also, New York City alone every day creates enough garbage to fill up the entire Empire State Building. So you can see where we're going with this. It does make a difference. So do what you can to reduce, reuse, recycle, and reduce your ecological footprint. It doesn't go away, of course. There's no away here. It's all out in the landfills. And while we're not running out of landfill space, as sort of some people made us feel we were a couple of decades ago, we, of course, are, you know, seeing consequences of dumping everything from computer waste, electronic waste is a big problem, to just all the construction and development waste, C&D, as they call it, really does add up. And nobody wants a landfill in their backyard, so let's just try to keep it to a minimum. There's a lot we can all do, certainly a lot more. That tip from Nerdy Books. And when we come back, Tree Hugger Thursday is up. Correspondent Simran Sethi talks to Daryl Hannah in part two of her interview with the actress and activist. She's especially excited about biodiesel as a great green alternative. Stay with us.
You're listening to the best of Eco Talk.
You're listening to AM 1320.
Win fast, win often.
The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to stackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's stackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, stackjobs.com is a click away. At stackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
About gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Welcome back to Eco Talk. Time now for today's edition of Tree Hugger Thursday. It's brought to you by the Organic Coffee Company. They want to remind all of us that organic coffee is better tasting, better for us, and better for our environment. Also better for the workers that harvest the coffee. Buy delicious roaster fresh organic coffee today. You can find them on the web at organiccoffeecompany.com. Taste a difference, make a difference at organiccoffeecompany.com. Well, on last week's Tree Hugger Thursday, correspondent Simran Sethi gave us a preview of their interview with Daryl Hannah, one of the most thoughtful, soft-spoken, but at the same time outspoken actresses in Hollywood today. In this continuing conversation with Hannah, you'll hear that even without a script, hers is one of the most interesting narratives in showbiz.
I'm Simran Sethi from TreeHugger.com, the largest pure environmental site on the World Wide Web. Today we bring you special excerpts from our recent interview with environmental activist and actress Daryl Hannah. Best known on screen for her roles in Kill Bill Volumes 1 and 2, Daryl has been making a significant splash off-screen as well. After the launch of the war, she decided to publicize the work that she had been doing in her own life to wean herself off fossil fuels. Her El Camino is powered with biodiesel, she has her own organic garden, and her homes are off the grid. Daryl has been awarded the Influencer of the Year Award by the National Biodiesel Board and has been lauded by nonprofits and the press alike for her commitment to renewable energy, supporting local farms, and understanding the connection between our consumption and environmental degradation.
It's just my belief system, first of all. It was like a common sense sort of approach to life, in my opinion. And the first thing that I did, because I'm not comfortable at being a public person, or never really felt comfortable in the the role of a celebrity or exploiting myself. So the first thing I did is just try to, you know, live my own life more in tune with my beliefs and in harmony with those philosophies. And I'm, you know, that's a constant struggle. It's something I'm always trying to do and upgrade myself, you know. So that was sort of the first thing I did, and it really wasn't until a few years ago that I actually started being more public about that. But first things first, I tried to take care of my own yard, you know, clean up my own life and get it to be as much in line with my belief system as I could. I haven't gone to a gas station in, I don't even know, maybe 7 years. I've been driving on biodiesel for a long time, and now that I have a bit of a dilemma with that. Luckily, I know where my supply of biofuels comes from, but as this opportunity starts to become apparent to the business community, more and more people are jumping into it, which is great on the one hand, but on the other hand, it causes a whole new set of problems, because then you've got, you know, big businesses like ADM and Monsanto jumping in the game. And to me, to you know, to cut down a rainforest to plant a grove of palm trees or to plant a field of soybeans or rapeseed so that we can grow fuel is not the right idea. That's solving a mistake with another mistake. I think it's going to be a key time to really get all the people who were supported biofuels from the beginning and who were into it and made it popular from the very beginning are the people who wanted it particularly because it was sustainable, to start making those distinctions now before it starts going too far, I think would be really important, so that people, when they do make that choice to buy biofuel, for example, they know if they're buying one that is sustainably produced and harvested or not. I went down there to shoot a video blog on the farm when I heard that the largest urban farm in the nation was in the middle of South Central LA. It seemed so paradoxical to me. And so I went down there to shoot a video blog on it, and I learned that the very next day they were getting their eviction notice because they were only able to raise $6 million rather than the 16.3 that the developer had wanted, who had recently bought the land. And so I decided, because I met these farmers, I saw the absolutely incredible beauty and that they had created from this place that had previously been a, you know, basically a fallow land where it was sort of burnt out refrigerators and body parts and stuff. It was like a dump, and they turned it into a Garden of Eden, and in so many ways was a perfect microcosm, a perfect example of a solution to so many of the issues we face today, in so many different ways. You know, it absorbed greenhouse gases, fighting global warming in one of the most polluted parts of the city. It provided food for thousands and thousands of people in one of the poorest parts of the city, that they were able to grow themselves at no expense to the, you know, to the city or anyone else. It provided a safe haven for their kids, and of course a place where, you know, kids are shot on a regular basis in the middle of the street in broad daylight, one of the most, you know, drug-ridden areas and dangerous areas in the city. It created a place for generational exchange, and, you know, people could pass down their heirloom plants and traditional medicinal plants and farming practices, as well as, you know, get to know each other. And so it was one of those places that was so inspiring to be at that I was so overwhelmed with this what they had created there that I just decided to stay and put my body on the line to help them try to raise awareness so that they could raise the rest of the money and buy it, which in the end they did. They ended up raising the rest of the money, but the developer decided that he didn't want to sell it to, quote, those people anyway. So even though they ended up raising the $16.3 million, it was not able to be bought. It's now in what we call Nelson Mandela is in jail period, where it's sort of in limbo. It's in the Court of Appeals, and there are, you know, other alternative plans afoot as well in case they aren't able to buy that exact piece of land. But if not, you know, where they're still trying. Somos Well, I don't really put much stock in my public perception. I don't really think about it. I don't really care about it very much in terms of, you know, trying to manipulate what that is. I just have to kind of, you know, live my life like a, you know, normal human being. And the thing that sort of motivates me to do those things, to speak out, even though I am kind of, my nature is to be, you know, a shy person and more introverted, is just, you know, when I kind of reach my limit of tolerance and I see, you know, how I, for example, I saw how the events after 9/11 were being manipulated and, you know, history was being rewritten so that, you know, we were moving towards war, I realized that it was important to speak out and let people know that there were alternatives to our dependence upon fossil fuels, and that there were alternatives to sending our kids to foreign countries to fight a war and come home in body bags for oil. And I realized that was on the horizon. I started speaking out. Of course, it's happening, and it happened. But at the same time, I think more and more people are now becoming aware that we do have options.
Daryl has given us her solutions. Now we want to hear yours. Log on to truths.treehugger.com and learn more about submitting your video entries on solutions to global warming. The contest has been endorsed by former Vice President Al Gore, and Daryl, along with an illustrious panel of judges, including Lori David of StopGlobalWarming.org, Cameron Sinclair of Architecture for Humanity, and Arianna Huffington of The Huffington Post, will help determine which entrants will be eligible for prizes, including an all-expense-paid trip for two to the Alaskan wilderness, an eco-home makeover, and solar-powered bikes and bags. Next week, we'll take a look at ways to green your holiday. Until then, thanks to CalabashMusic.com for the tunes, and thanks to you for listening.
Thank you, Simran. And speaking of Hollywood, where that interview with Daryl Hannah took place, this very evening, the California League of Conservation Voters honored Al Gore himself, of course, the inspiration for the movie You Must See If You Haven't, The Inconvenient Truth, as well as all the producers that were part of that. And the movie has just very recently come out on DVD, so if you haven't seen it, all of you who I've approached to say, have you seen it? And you say, well, I'm going to wait till the DVD comes out. This is the time to go get it. Sooner is better than later, because there's really no time to waste in terms of how you're going to make your impact a little bit lighter on the earth. And the movie does end with sort of rolling credits of things we can all do to lighten our footprint. And then for more information, of course, tune into EcoTalk. We like to say we pick up where the movie leaves off, because we do focus on sound solutions for a healthier planet and people. Want you to stay with us. When we come back, we'll be giving you some green gift ideas, as Simran just touted, for another version of Tree Hugger Thursday. We've got some organic candles and bedding, linen that is really pesticide-free, chemical-free, and much healthier for you. And since we do spend at least half of our time, I guess about a third of our day, but a lot of our lives in between the sheets, why not have something that's healthier for your body, your skin, and perhaps even your lungs? We don't know the impact of all these chemicals, but better to be safe. Now, this stuff is a little pricey. It's really at the luxury high end of what's offered, but it is worth it if you can afford it. And it's also a great way to find some green gift ideas. And since green is hot, it's the new black. Hopefully it won't set you back so much you'll be in the red. Get something that's just very chic, current, and eco-friendly. So we want you to check out our website in case you joined us midway. If you missed last night's show, you'll want to check us out at www.ecotalk.net, where we have everything that we've done for the last 6 months or so archived there. You can listen at your own convenience. It's free. Just download the audio segment. They run from, you know, 7 to 12 minutes each, so a great thing to do while you're cleaning up your office at home or whatever you're doing and you want to have some interesting information in the background. Thanks for listening to Eco Talk. We are your tree-free audio magazine. We'll be right back.
The best of Eco Talk on AIR America Radio.
One of your best friends. I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left-handed listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and Almond Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. SMUD financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sam.
To understand it,
Miss Romney,
what drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was? It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You got all, you think you got all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
Mitt Romney gets the nomination. The tunnels win. Think about it. Tourists, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott! It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
No more cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate. And then up your ass. All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Welcome back to Eco Talk. Tis the season to bear and receive and bring gifts, maybe hostess gifts. And we're going to be taking a look at some of the more eco-friendly but luxurious options out there. Our next guest is the CEO of a company called Anasova. It's a company which offers luxury items to those of us who want to lead lives that are as toxin-free as possible. Designer Whitney Anna Walker has grown a radically different kind of company committed to the purest, most luxurious, eco-safe home products available. From silk bedding to 100% soy-based candles, and she brought one with her in the studio, and it smells wonderful. Anasova will offer luxury that you don't have to feel guilty about buying. And welcome to the EcoTalk Studios, and thanks for bringing some green goodies with you.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Betsy.
Just give us a little bit of background about your company and why you decided to be kind of a green Martha Stewart.
Oh, ouch, that hurts.
You don't like that? Sorry.
Oh, no, I appreciate it.
That's
it's a
how
huge
you were
compliment.
Built. I used to be called that, too. The Martha Stewart of garbage, they called me. Reduce, reuse, recycle was my beat, and it's expanded from there. But
that's a great beat.
Go ahead.
Basically, I've been a product designer for almost 25 years, and I realized how many toxins were involved in producing textiles. We started with organic cotton velvet draperies and a lot of textiles, and what I realized is that, number one, as many of you may know, 25% of the world's pesticides are used on one crop, which is cotton. horrifying.
And it uses a lot of water as well. It's very resource intensive.
Also, conventional cotton farming is responsible for this desalination of the soil.
And almost everything we wear is cotton.
Well, not soon, because we have a clothing line coming out in the spring.
Okay.
Which is actually very fun, sexy. The t-shirts will be at Bloomingdale's this weekend. We have a trunk show Saturday and Sunday. In the linens department, we'll be showing the world's first 600 thread count, Italian-produced, 100% organic cotton,
wow,
luxury Italian linens.
And that will set you back about how much?
Well, they are luxurious, about $600 a set.
Wow.
But is that fabulous? Can anybody hear that on air? That's very silky.
Yeah, it's a beautiful color. It's kind of a mustard color, and it is very soft.
It's fabulous. And it's, if you know anything about luxury or luxury linens, you might be familiar with the companies like Frete, Pratisi, Anacchini. These are some of the most fabulous linen companies in the world. They're hundreds and hundreds of years old, and we all have been the first company to decide to actually make one of these mills and these producing companies go all organic. So I've worked for 4.5 years to get both American organic Pima cotton and other cotton involved with an Italian mill, so we could start from the ground up with the thread, the actual running of the fabric, and the, of course, the dyeing and the bleaching is a huge issue, because if you're going to be buck naked for 8 hours a night, you might as well wrap yourself in something that's not soaked in carcinogenic dioxin bleaches or azo or heavy metal dyes or silicone or formaldehyde sizing, which happen to all be coating conventional cotton linens.
Leading to not-so-sweet dreams.
No.
Maybe nightmares. What else do you offer besides candles and very luxurious organic bedding?
Well, we have the 100% organic cotton linens. We also have these new Turkish towels. I don't know if you can see these. These are like...
I can see it. Let me feel
it. This is also another world's first. It's a 900 GSM. It's like a blanket, basically. It's not as eco-safe to wash, but it's incredibly decadent to own and wrap yourself in. It's made in Turkey, and once again, I worked with the mill from the ground up to have this mill be the first SCAL-certified mill in Turkey that will do this quality of a towel. So it's a beautiful product. There's not another one like it out on the market, and once again, we'll be at the Bloomingdale's Trunk Show on Saturday or Sunday, so you can feel it in person.
Okay, now some of these are better for our bodies and our health, we think. We're quite sure. What about the environment and in terms of the manufacturing process?
Much better for the planet. If you realize that cotton is responsible for 25% of the world's pesticides, you also realize that the difference between conventional cotton, which is a monoculture that destroys the soil and all of the incredible microbes and wonderful little insects that need to be in the soil, it also leads to global warming. There's a direct
link. Yeah,
thank you very much.
That's
a great word.
Yeah. So tell us about, I'm interested in the candles, because it is the holiday season. They can really create some atmosphere. And when you light traditional candles, I guess it's the paraffin in it, and you blow it out, or it goes out,
paraffin.
It's just a really acrid, foul smell, and you know it's bad.
It's bad. Well, actually, according to the EPA, there's up to 7 carcinogens in your average paraffin candle. What we use is soy vegetable wax, and we use 100% soy vegetable wax. We use real aromatherapy oils, true essential oils, and we've actually built a product that is very, very unique. And the EPA has said that up to 3 candles in a room can be the same as smoking a cigarette.
Wow.
Huge.
So where can people find your products?
Well, as I said, this weekend...
besides, nationally.
Oh, sorry.
We have a national audience. Not everybody can come to San Francisco.
But I love San Francisco. But in the meantime, nationally on our website, and we have stores, if you look on our website, nationwide, that are all over the country. And
are you seeing growing demand for your products? I imagine so.
It's huge. It grows every single month. Our company is very young. It's only a year and a half old that we've been available to the public, but it's about 10 or 12 years of R&D, so people don't realize what a labor of love it is to actually have been the first people to produce these products.
You're obviously wanting to break some stereotypes with your products, that it doesn't have to be crunchy granola, sacrifice, Birkenstock folks only appreciating these products.
Well, I think if we can cross over to a more mainstream audience, it will make a much larger impact on the planet. It's far more important to reach more customers and more consumers, and if you can sell more, then of course that will make a much larger impact on the amount of cotton growers.
Do you do much education outreach with your products? Do you include a little note talking about the environmental friendly benefits?
Yes, we have great consumer info books that are available. If you email us, we are happy to send them out for free. And they cover everything involving all of your linen products and your cotton products and paint. We also make paint, by the way. It's made out of food. 100% food.
You're from Texas.
Yes, I am.
That's not traditionally a very eco-friendly green state.
It's really scary. Sorry. I love Texas, but it can be very scary.
So do you feel a little bit like you're isolated with these products and your mission, and you're surrounded by not-so-green mentality?
Bushites, the oil industry, Exxon, Halliburton.
Does that discourage you, all that, being surrounded by that? Because after all, this is only a little tiny piece of the entire picture, although admirable and luxurious and wonderful, and that candle just smells so wonderful.
Absolutely. Now, there's a few of us left that are not swayed by money in Texas or oil. May I say that?
Mm-hmm. You may say whatever you want.
Good. It's very hard being from Texas.
It's not easy being green in that state.
But it's coming around. Austin is a fabulous area. And it's very, very green.
And we all need to, breathe healthy air, drink healthy water, eat healthy food. So even those who don't know it, this is good for them.
Absolutely.
Thanks for your products and your company. Anna Walker with the company Anisova.
Yes.
And we'll have a link to their website on our website. Find us on the Internet at www.ecotalk.net. And have a wonderful green holiday season.
Best of EcoTalk with Betsy Rosenberg on Air America Radio.